Hey everybody, it's Brad Williams and Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by White Cloud e-cigarettes.
We're not saying you should start smoking, but if you already do, awesome. And if you've ever wanted to try an e-cigarette, these are the ones to go with. White Cloud e-cigarettes offers over 20 flavors. That's almost as many as Baskin-Robbins. 20 flavors and 6 nicotine strengths. It's cheaper than other e-cigarettes that you'll see at convenience stores and with much more variety. White Cloud e-cigarettes sponsors comedians. They've been doing it for over 2 years now. They've also sponsored comedy festivals like the Boston Comedy Festival and the Orlando Indie Comedy Festival. If you've ever been curious about trying an e-cigarette, I have. Well, the Fling is the low-cost, no-commitment way to do so. And the Fling offers same-day UPS shipping on orders before 6 p.m. Eastern.
But is there a website?
Customers can go to WCESigs.com. That's WCESigs.com.
But we want to make sure our listeners get them for cheap. So is there a coupon code?
To get 25% off of the order, use the coupon code ALNPODCAST. That's ALNPODCAST at WCESigs.com to get your White Cloud e-cigarettes today. And now, enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray.
Hi ho!
On your mark, get set,
go! And they're off, and they're trying to shoot the blue juice into the bucket. And there goes Mom, and she's shooting that blue juice really hard. And I feel like that's kind of dirty for me to say, but here comes Daddy's also catching that blue juice from little Chrissy. She's shooting that blue juice on. Come on, you gotta keep going. You've got 30 seconds left on the clock. You gotta win that first challenge here to get that Casio keyboard. Oh, and there, oh, Mom falls down from the blue juice. Too much blue juice everywhere. Oh, blue juice everywhere. Blue juice everywhere. It's double dare. Everywhere. I'm Mark Summers, and double dare is what I host. You win Casio keyboards and trips to Disneyland. I didn't realize there was such a amazing guitar solo.
Man, holy crap, that's like Eddie Van Halen.
Double dare. Yeah, 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 it's double dare. Yeah, 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 double dare. Pie in the face, I don't care, cause it's double.
Double dare. How awesome is this freaking podcast today?
If you subscribe to the About Last Night podcast, you know what today is. It's a day that Brad and I have been dreaming about since
this podcast was conceived.
Yeah.
And we found out that we can have guests.
We had bucket list guests.
Yes. And
Jaleel White.
Jaleel White.
Harlan Williams.
Harlan Williams. Mr. Belding.
Yep.
And this person was on our list from the beginning, and we finally got to talk to him, and he lived up to every bit of the hype. Mark Summers.
Mark Summers.
Mark freaking wow. Summers.
Host of Double Dare. Host of What Would You Do? Host of Unwrapped on the Food Network. Producer of Restaurant Impossible.
And we could have just stopped at Double Dare. Because you know it could be, I mean, because you know who he is. So anyone who did that show that had that sort of impact on people could have just called it a career. But as you'll find out in this interview, Mark he's got such a motor on him. He's got such a great attitude towards life and this business that there's no doubt that he was ever going to not make it.
Yeah, 64 years old, working as much as he has and is still doing, like the stuff he told us he was working on before he left is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And not only, do we talk about Double Dare a lot?
Sure.
Yeah. Do we get some inside stories you've never heard before?
Absolutely.
Do we talk about his appearances on Oprah and The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and when she got into a fight with Burt Reynolds?
Which is like the Burt Reynolds versus Mark Summers, you would think that would only be on that MTV show Celebrity Deathmatch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
that was never going to follow the Manny Pacquiao.
Floyd Mayweather, that guy?
Yeah.
Good job, Adam.
Hey, well, I already forgot. Hey, I forget dumb fights. Just like I forgot fighting Kyle Nielsen in fourth grade, I forgot Pacquiao Mayweather. Because guess what? They both were the same amount of greatness.
Sure. The stories he picked up on, I learned so much about this guy that I had no idea about.
Started as a stand-up comic and a radio DJ and a magician.
Right.
The Comedy Store stories he told of bringing up Robin Williams and Letterman and Leno, I mean, that was something I didn't expect us to get into.
Growing up with David Letterman in Indiana.
Playing
racquetball with David Letterman. That's literally what he's done in his life. What have you done in your life? not played Racquetball with David Letterman.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But just so interesting, and we went into so many different facets. We talked about, like we said, we talked about Double Dare, Comedy Store, all the shows he's been involved with. We touched upon the fact that he's got OCD and has famously lived with it. And if you should go on YouTube and look about Mark Summers on Dateline, because it's a really fascinating look. And my dad has OCD, so I wanted to talk to him about that. And that part was fascinating. This podcast quickly shot to the top of my list of like one of my favorites. And
yeah, because as we said, you know, he's been a hero of ours, and and to be this cool and funny and you know,
tell such fascinating stories.
Receptive to telling us stories that he hasn't told before,
right?
Was really great.
And he curses. So if you ever want to hear Mark Summers curse, if you ever had that fantasy, by all means, keep listening and enjoy. But before we get to that, obviously we gotta talk about where we're gonna be.
Oh, we got Mark on Twitter.
Oh yeah.
And before you really get into this episode, YouTube the Burt Reynolds Mark Summers Tonight Show clip.
Absolutely.
Because the story that follows, it'll be that much better to listen to the behind the scenes of that story. So watch that. Watch if you want to watch some of the Dateline clip on YouTube. Watch that too, and familiarize yourself with Unwrapped. And you know what? Go back and watch a YouTube clip of Double Dare just to make your life better. That's not even for the podcast,
right?
That's because, hey, do you want to wake up with a smile on your face? YouTube Double Dare. Do you want to go to bed feeling good about the day that just preceded you? YouTube Double Dare.
Double Dare.
I'm going to go around the country telling kids to YouTube Double Dare. But I want to be a fireman. Fuck off. YouTube Double Dare. But I want to move to Wisconsin and have four kids and start a family and start my own business. You can do that after you YouTube Double Dare.
Yeah, wow. You sound like that Ronco guy, like set it and forget it. That's like Adam Ray's catchphrase, YouTube Double Dare. I like it. So follow Mark Summers on Twitter. What's his Twitter, Adam Ray?
At LBATVMC. LBATVMC. But if you Google Mark Summers' Twitter, it'll come up. But follow him on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Brad, where are you going to be coming up?
Well, Pittsburgh, PA. I'm coming to you May 14th through the 16th. I'm going to be at the Improv in Pittsburgh. And then Columbus, Ohio. May 21st through the 24th, I'm going to be at the Funny Bone right there in Columbus, one of my favorite clubs. So come on out, and hopefully you watched my special, Brad Williams Fun Size.
It was incredible.
On Showtime.
They were unbelievable.
Thank you, sir.
I've seen those jokes, and they were even better watching them on my TV.
Thank you, sir.
Maybe it was because of the vest, but maybe it was because you brought a little something special, because it
special. I think the thing I brought special was the vest, maybe. But it was so much fun.
You were incredible.
To do. Thank you, buddy. Yeah. And Showtime, thankfully, is re-airing the crap out of this thing.
Yeah.
So go to the Showtime website and find out when Brad Williams Fun Size is re-airing and watch it. And for all tour dates, go to bradwilliamscomedy.com.
There you go. Come see me, Vancouver, BC. The Comedy Mix, Vancouver, BC, May 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. In Vancouver, BC, get your tickets at comedymix.com. It's a great club. It's a great city. And I'll be there. So come see me May 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. And then, of course, you can see me at the Scottsdale Laugh Factory in Scottsdale, Arizona, June 25th through the 28th. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. And then, of course, the Parlor Live, July 9th through the 11th. It's a few months away, but I want to get the word out because, hey, Seattle, that's hometown. And those tickets, they're going to go fast. So you got to come out and see me at the Parlor in Bellevue, July 9th through the 11th. And after you come see Brad and I live, go to AstoriaMerchandise.com and get your ABLN merch. We got shirts, we got mugs, We got stuff that you want and that you need, and you got to wear it and support the podcast. Because if you wear your shirts to the shows, what are we going to do to them?
We're going
to
sign those shirts.
We're going to sign them.
And that increases the value of those shirts by 3 whole cents. That's right.
Oh, man, what a dick.
And as always, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Rate the podcast on iTunes. Leave a comment on there and tell them how much you love it, because that helps us in our ratings. Helps us get better guests, which after Mark Summers, I don't even know how we're going to top this.
But yeah, if you take 2 seconds, rate the podcast, give it a 5-star rating, and comment on the iTunes page. That helps us out a lot. Take 2 seconds, write a comment. Write, you guys are rad. Write, you have a bomb-ass summer. Write something, you know, rhyme something like Adam and Brad, you know, should, you know,
aren't bad,
aren't bad,
are rad.
Wow, I couldn't come up
can
with
create
one.
Fad.
I couldn't come up with. It took me 4 seconds to rhyme let you bread. Come up with a word that rhymes with bread. Jesus Christ,
that's so sad.
too soon. but of course, subscribe on iTunes. Listen on aboutlastnightpodcast.com and keep listening because we got more awesome guests and more great shows coming at you. Now that all the tour date info is out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's all the merch info. So now sit back, relax, and enjoy quite possibly the greatest episode of the About Last Night podcast in the history of the world with our guest, the one and only Mark Summers.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
First of all, I just want to say this is a real treat for us.
Oh,
and I wonder if it gets old for you to hear that because
no.
I'm watching a lot of.
No. I just love it because whatever that show was, mm-hmm. it hit a particular.
Shows, by the way.
Yeah. I guess they did more than one. Whatever an impact it had, it was huge. And the fact that people still remember and want to talk about it is fascinating to me. And I just found out that Nickelodeon and Viacom released a new DVD in the last week of. You know, stuff that I did.
Bloopers?
Yeah, no, just the shows.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And it's like, you know, and they'll try and not pay me again, and then I'll have to go after them. And, you know,
shots fired, Nick. Hey, Nick Jr., we're coming after you next.
Honest to God. They just always try to get away with it. Well, we paid you overscale for the show, so
oh,
we get...
Oh, like, the guy know. Justified. It's yeah. like, no, you're still re-releasing the stuff, and there is no... Double Dare without Mark Summers.
Well, and I was the only guy, you know, O'Malley and all those guys who were hosting shows, I was the only guy who was paid union. Somehow they got away without paying those guys, and I demanded to be paid through AFTRA. So, you know, we still have recourse, and they every couple of years they get sued by AFTRA because they try to get around without paying me, and it just never ends, you know.
Wow, not since the episode where SpongeBob fought with Squidward has there been so much conflict about Nickelodeon.
Very funny. That's hysterical.
That's right.
You say you had no idea the impact it was going to have, and I guess there really is. And you know this better than anybody from being in the business for what 40 years, right?
Yeah,
I
think 40 years.
So I mean, frightening. But you know, but you know that like there's no guarantee on anything. There's no as great as Double Dare probably tested. You still were like, well, you know, you just don't know until
you know. About year three, we started to go, you know. I bet 20 years from now, kids are going to be talking about this in some form or fashion.
I bet two grown men in their 30s are going to like not be able to stop. Do you know, by the way, I used to have a joke in my act. My folks split when I was 9. Thanks for bringing that up, Mark. And and I used to have a joke.
Get over it.
Well, now you have to.
I just say, I want to be in a contestant on Double Dare so bad as a kid that if somebody came to me and said, hey, would you rather have your parents get back together or be a contestant on Double Dare? I'd say, I'll take the physical challenge. Because I've already been through the emotional challenge.
That's for darn sure.
Yeah.
You know, we started to realize that we had something going there, and then mm-hmm. we started to write bits around the fact. And it's so weird to me where people come up off the streets and, you know, somebody holding a baby saying, you know, this one episode where Robin did the Green Goddess joke, and I go, how do you remember that stuff?
How
you
does know? That happen? Yeah. Like, there's fandom, and then there's super fandom.
Oh, man, there's some people who are obsessed with that show who can tell me more stuff than I even remember.
Do you remember episode 5 of season 6 when Janice, she was about 15, she loved the clarinet and dragon. She couldn't find the flag
but
in the
you
nose.
You know what the sick thing is? They'll say, you know in season 3 when they changed the background and they went from the glass to the... I go, no, I have no idea about that stuff. And they'll tell me when there were set changes.
Holy crap. You're like, so, I just showed up and collected a paycheck.
Well, no, I was having a ball. I was having the best time of my life. But I just thought it was insane that people were that obsessed where they could tell me when, well, you know, when Byron Taylor changed the background. How do you know the set designer's name?
Dude, was there ever a time when you guys...
got back. Like, there's one of my favorite moments.
Here we go.
First of all, I love, because you, and we'll get into this, you, you were a stand-up comic for how long?
I started doing stand-up in 1974. Well, here's the deal. Yeah. I was a professional magician,
right.
Okay?
Yeah. Holy crap.
And so I moved to L.A., and I started working the Magic Castle. And
were you Mark Berkowitz at this time?
I was Mark Berkowitz at that mm-hmm. point. And I woke up one morning, and...
belated happy Pesach, by the way.
Thank you.
You're sitting with one other tribesman.
And I can pick out which one that
yeah.
is.
Brad is an honorary goy.
I'm kind of Jewish by association. I'm pretty sure in some Jewish households, instead of gelt, they pass around midgets. And
like little people, please.
Oh, okay. You know, oh, I'm sorry.
Get it
I'm
right for the love of God.
I'm sorry for offending you, Mark.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
don't
a new show
that.
We're trying to.
Now I'm upset.
That's a new show, Offending Mark Summers.
That's right. As the midget sits across from me. Nonetheless, where have we gone off?
So magician.
Magician. So I was mm-hmm. a magician, and I was playing comedy clubs, yeah. and I was opening for Gallagher, and he goes to me, "Hey, Berkowitz, you're an asshole." And I said, "Why?" And he goes, "Because you know when you pick up a prop, you get paid less." Now, this is a man who had more props than any human in the world.
Yeah.
He said, "You pick up a prop as an opening act, you make less money." And I found that I was being paid $150 as an opening act, and the comics were getting $3. And I'm going, "Holy shit." So,
really?
Yeah. So I slowly weaned my – I would open with a little card trick, and then I slowly just got into stand-up. And so I became a regular at the Comedy Store in 76 – with guys like Dave Letterman and Jay Leno and Robin Williams and Shandling. I was in that group.
Yeah.
And I'm still proud by the fact, if you go to the Comedy Store, my name is still on the wall.
I've seen
which
it.
Which is very cool. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that, you know.
It's way cool. You don't realize how much of a stamp and just a notch on the belt that is, because no other club has a rite of passage like that.
Right. And so I'm thrilled.
I didn't know that was... You, Mark Summers.
Yeah.
I thought that name was like, there's some other comic named Mark Summers.
That was me, man.
Wow.
And so I started there at the store until Mitzi said one day, "I can't do anything else for you. I'm not going to book you anymore."
Mark Summers has a Mitzi Shore impression.
Everybody
does. Has one.
Yeah,
everyone
they all sound different. They all sound like her.
Yeah.
And I worked the improv because this is another interesting story. You know, Bud and Mitzi hated each other. And
yeah.
The thing
Bud
we always
Freeman,
wanted
yep.
to see was a car crash on Sunset Boulevard where Bud and Mitzi hit each other and they got out and, you know, what the hell was going to happen? Mm-hmm. But, you know, all those owners, quite honestly, were pretty much hated by all the comics
right.
because they controlled our lives, especially back then.
Yeah.
And because Norman Lear could walk in at the time and make somebody a sitcom star, Jimmy Walker, whoever. And so there was a fire at the Improv one night.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, I showed up at 8 in the morning and said, "Hey, Bud, what can I do?" I was the only comic. Everybody who ever worked that club didn't show up.
Get out.
I showed up at 8 in the morning and said, "Hey, Bud." And so for the next couple of weeks, I helped clean up all the fire damage with Bud Friedman. And after that, I owned the place. I was emceeing on weekends.
Wow.
And
which
that
is a big deal.
It was
huge.
You couldn't. I mean, come on.
Who was coming through those lineups when you were emceeing? Who were you bringing
well,
to the
Richard
stage?
Lewis, Andy Kaufman. I went to college with Andy Kaufman, but Andy
what?
Was
Get
yeah.
out.
And so.
In Graham Junior College.
At
right?
Graham Junior College. And and Elaine Boozler. And, you know, it was a who's who of comedy. And some of the only acts who were able to cross over at the time, Jay could do it. Dave never went to the Improv, but Jay did it. Richard Lewis did it. Robin did it. But there was sort of a dividing line between Comedy Store and Improv.
Sure.
But the Improv was the harder room to work. The best room to work was a place called the Laugh Stop in Newport Beach. You could break in new material there and never have a fear because it would always work. And then you would take that same material that killed at the Laugh Stop the week before and do it at the Improv and die, man. It was unbelievable.
It's always one of the more frustrating things about being a stand-up comic. It's you're like, why did this work here and
yes,
not over here?
It never been, you know. And people say there's no such thing as a bad audience. I disagree with that. There were audiences that sucked.
Yeah,
okay?
There are.
And my favorite night to perform was always Thursday night. For some reason, Thursday night was a hot crowd. I guess it was because they were getting ready for the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were jazzed up, you know. Like, Monday always sucked. Tuesday mm-hmm. was like, Wednesday, But, you know, generally Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Turning a corner.
Yes.
And it's only one more day of work, and you're probably not going to put in a full day or a great day.
But the worst thing that could happen to you at the Comedy Store, not that you're asking me this question, but I'm going to answer it.
Fantastic.
Was when Robin Williams was getting ready to do a Tonight Show, and he'd come in and go, "Can I just do 10 minutes? Well, Robin took 10 minutes to say hello. And so he would do 45
of course.
Insane... Yeah. Off the charts.
Standing ovation.
Insane.
Yeah.
And my line, and now they say, "Please welcome the comedy of Mark Berkowitz." And I'd say, "Oh, look, ladies and gentlemen, a walking ovation was my opening line." because everybody would walk out and
right.
he'd be left with six.
Because he sucked the room dry.
Nobody could follow him.
Yeah.
And so it was six lovers and drunks left who didn't give a shit about what I was doing on stage.
But that's where you cut your teeth, right? That's I mean, you really got...
At 12:45, if you could make anybody laugh.
Yeah, because once I got past those are the spots I got for the first 3-4 years.
That's all you get.
And it's really, you're bummed because you're like... Oh, I want to get better spots. But then once you realize that, oh, just to be getting spots there is great. And then you're like, all right, well, there's a reason I'm getting these late spots. Let me use these to my advantage.
Yeah.
And
break in stuff.
I'm sure there was something to be said about the spots you got there that transitioned into the way you dealt with really stupid kids on Double Dare.
Kids that
when you would ask a question, which is what I was going to get back to, is when you ask a question, you go, how many knees does Oprah have?
Right.
And these two kids look at each other. And they confer with each other, as you do, because you're teammates and you should come up with one answer.
Yep.
But hey, man, when that question's asked, one of you should just respond without even checking in.
Don't you think?
Because you asked, how many knees?
Yes. That was always a give me question.
Right.
And they would, question one was a give me, question two was a 50-50, and question three was a physical challenge question. That's how we would build the packets.
They were impossible, the physical challenge questions.
Oh, right? Usually. You know, it's like take the amount of relatives that they had on the Brady Bunch times the amount of people on the Partridge Family and then multiply it by the number of planets. Literally, that's how we would write a question. And then.
So you were like, well, we have this giant mouth with slime in it, and we can't just not use it.
Right, exactly. You know. So, I mean, that's kind of how it worked. Then eventually, when they opened up the big room at the Comedy Store after the strike, and I was there during that whole situation,
sure.
and we got paid, I would be the MC on a Saturday night at the Comedy Store and walk out with a check with $180. It was like, holy shit, we never got paid.
And this was in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, late 70s. I stopped working the store in the early 80s.
So that's a large chunk of change. That's like walking out with maybe like $700 now.
I could pay my rent.
Wow.
My rent was $125. Right. So you get a check for performing one night at the Comedy Store for like $180. It depended on the crowd. Sometimes it was $95, it was $110. But certain nights, you could pretty much make your rent at the time. And then, plus, I was working the Magic Castle. I was doing, four shows a night, seven nights, 28 shows a week for $145.
So that your Holy school crap. Of, I mean, you didn't go to a hosting school. Your
no.
school, you're, it, you, all
I
of
performed.
Your, you
yeah.
performed, and that's, I mean, I think you would say to any young comic or aspiring host, right? I mean, I don't
Get
know
on
if you
stage.
Did you pull Jay Leno aside on those improv nights, and he was like,
"Hey, Mark, give me some,
let me tell you how to fix that joke."
Any tidbit on hosting? One day I'd like to host a show.
Would you?
No, Jay. When I got there, Jay and Dave owned, and Robin a year later owned the store, and they could do, and they would stand in front of the store, and they would hang out together, and then they'd watch you, and they make Jay make conversation. You know, if you took the word "it" out of that, you get a better punch. That
they would give you some joke technicians.
Yes,
they
would.
They can break it down literally to the word.
The best was a guy by the name of Bobby Kelton. I don't know if you know who Bobby Kelton is,
sounds
but
familiar.
Bobby was a joke master. And when I first got to the Comedy Store, Bobby Kelton, a guy by the name of Glenn Super, who unfortunately passed away, Ellis Levinson, and a guy by the name of Mark Scheffler would be the guys who would help write my act. And they formed the first 20 minutes that I did. And we'd go out and do it, and it would suck, or we'd get better, or you'd figure out where the rhythm or the, you know, what was going on. And you just got to do it. And that's what I tell people. You got to get on stage. You can't want to be a host. You can't want to be a stand up comic. You got to freaking do it.
Yeah. There's no other way to get the experience.
Right.
By watching.
Yeah, that's what I love about this business is you can't take a class. You can't read a book and be like, okay, well, now I'm a comedian.
No.
Now I'm a host. You just have to get out there and do it. And when you're performing, like you say, 28 shows a week between the Magic Castle
you better,
and the
Comedy
Store.
Unless you suck so bad, you've got to get better.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you learn by doing it.
Yeah, you put in your 10,000 hours in about 6 months. Good Lord, Mark Summers.
But, here was the interesting thing. So when I auditioned for Double Dare, I was 33 years old. And so I looked a lot younger, but I had tons of experience. I had done warm-ups on Webster and Star Search and What's Happening Now and Our Magazine. I was the warm-up king.
Audience warm-up,
And audience
for people who don't know, that is an incredibly difficult job.
Yes.
Because you have people... It's almost like doing a late spot at the Comedy Store where you've got people from all over.
But for
over.
4 freaking hours.
Yeah, you have to be funny for 4 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. Basically, any show that you see with a live studio audience, the studio audience that doesn't just sit there. There's a comic or a host or someone who sort of cheerleads them through.
It makes them laugh and keeps them entertained during the down period.
Right. And as soon as their taping resumes, you could be mid-bit and building to a punchline.
You better shut up.
They just, the momentum. Yeah, it's a moment. You have no momentum.
It's brutal. And so I did that for a number of years. At one point, I was doing a show called Soap. Next to me was a show called Bosom Buddies, and Bob Saget was the warm up guy. And across the hall from us was Barney Miller, and Letterman was doing the warm up on that.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so the three
of
us.
I had no idea about those guys.
Absolutely. We all did that. And Dave hated it. And Dave's manager brought him over and said, "You got to watch this guy, Mark Summers. He's really good at it." You know, and I knew Dave from Indiana because we both grew up there. I used to play racquetball with Dave.
What?
And all the time.
Can that be the name of your biography? I used to play racquetball with Dave.
That's whatever happened to him. But
I think you should go on his show before he closes down and share
some
racquetball
stories.
You know
what? It's so funny. I have never been
on Letterman.
Back in the day, when Double Dare was bigger than life, I used to go and hang out at NBC with Dave because it was a phenomenon. All of his writers, everybody watched it. But Dave would never allow me to sit in the audience, okay? Now, anybody he knows isn't allowed to sit in the audience. So I would sit in the green room all the time. It was very frustrating. Same thing at the CBS show. So I've never sat in the audience. And Brian Tedder, who's a producer on the show, is a friend of mine. I can show you the email. I just got it today. Yeah. I begged him last week, I want to see the show once in the audience. And he said, you can't sit in the audience because you're... I just turned it off, damn. But because you're a celebrity. I said, nobody knows who I am. Nobody cares. And the word came back today, I was too big a name to sit in the audience. I went, oh, man. Nobody. I said, I'll wear glasses and a hat. And I'm not allowed to sit in the audience.
That's
frustrating.
Amazing.
No, he won't let me do it. Won't let me do it.
And not only is he a comrade in comedy, he's also just, a childhood
friend. I've known since, I was working at a station, WBMP in Elmwood, Indiana, an FM station, and I was 15 years old.
You were a radio DJ, right?
Yeah, so I started. So 61. So like 1965, 66, I was doing this. I couldn't even drive. So there was a guy by the name of Steve Warren who used to drive me. He was the chief engineer. Well, something happened, and he couldn't take me there any longer, and so I couldn't do it. And Letterman took my place at BMP in Elmwood in 65, 66.
Holy
so,
shit.
You know, we go back that far. He used to. I mean, I can tell you Indiana stories about Dave, but putting that aside... it's not a guy that I don't know. I know him, and he knows me. I can't get in.
Would you guys talk about... Well, we'll see what we can do about that. We might just have to get a Kickstarter going for Get Mark Summers in the audience at Letterman. Would you guys... when you were doing those warm-up, the audience warm-up stuff, would you guys, the same way comics help tag jokes?
We never interacted.
You
None of us
and
did.
Say, hey, here's a good joke you could
do. No, because we all handle it differently. You know, Dave had this... the delivery that he has doing his stand-up is what
dry.
He did out there.
Yeah.
Saget was insane. It's funny, I hadn't seen Bob in years, and I was, I'm bi-coastal. I live in Philly, and I live here. Mm-hmm. And he was performing in Philly, and I went to see him last week. And it's just crazy that, we're all basically doing the same stuff. But I sent him a text, and I said, 35 years on stage... And he controlled that audience. He didn't even really do an act. He did shtick and interacted. He walked out and he said, I think I'm related to everybody in this audience. But he was fun and funny and entertaining. And it's just so great to see that experience. Because all you ever hear is, he's filthy. He's disgusting. He's entertaining.
No, he's a pro. He'll bring out a guitar.
Yeah.
He'll play songs. He'll tell jokes. He'll do crowd work. And we know from watching him on all the shows he did that he's also a good actor and a good host as well.
Yeah, no, he does many things well, and he's got a really young, cute girlfriend.
Now, do you ever look at the careers of like a Bob Saget, where how he kind of stayed in stand-up the entire time and look like maybe you wish you had stayed in stand-up the entire time?
I was always confused. I really wanted to be a host. I wanted to be Johnny. I wanted to be Bob Barker. I wanted to do that. I never longed to be in stand-up, but I knew it was a way to get from point A to point B.
Right. Gotcha.
I was never really that funny. I was okay.
Were you game show funny? Because I'm sure you see Bob Barker. You wouldn't say he's a comedian, but he had good enough timing and... Even if somebody did something crazy, like the way he would just look at them or the audience.
Yes. Yeah. Barker and I, the first show I worked on was a show called Truth or Consequences that Barker used to host. And I used to go to there was no cafeteria or place to eat. There was a lunch truck, and we used to go out and have conversations. So I'd sit and talk to Barker. I was 22.
Wow.
And our favorite comedian that we had in common was Jack Benny. And Jack Benny used to make everybody around him the star. And if you watch Barker, that's what he did on Price all those years. He made the contestants the people. And so we would discuss that on a regular basis. And I was good with delivery and punchlines and know where to put the emphasis on a joke. Because as a kid, I just studied, anything that was on the Ed Sullivan Show. I watched Johnny Carson. I watched Hollywood Palace.
No
I watched the Dick Van Dyke Show. I was obsessed with entertainment. just wanted to be, you know,
involved somehow.
I had to do it. That was all. And I've been very lucky. I never had a job outside of show business. Once I left college, I never was a waiter. I never worked at Macy's. I never did anything like that. I always kept a job in the entertainment business and never took a job outside. I was very fortunate.
How? And so when you you left college in Boston?
In Boston, right? 1973, I came to Los Angeles.
And with the hopes of?
You know, hosting the Tonight Show, as we all did back then. We figured Johnny was going to leave. And I got a job as a page at CBS Television City, and I worked on Mary Tyler Moore and Sonny and Cher and Carol Burnett and All in the Family and all that kind of stuff.
Just doing odds and ends jobs and just
doing that,
helping out on the shows.
And then I became a game show writer. And the worst job I ever had outside of showbiz, I had two. One was I used to host a wet t-shirt contest at a place called Big Jaws in Long Beach.
Oh, man, that doesn't sound too bad.
$50 on a Sunday night.
But it was men. It was men. over 60.
And I was a DJ at a restaurant chain here in town called the Hungry Tiger, and I used to have to play disco music, and that's as far outside of show business as I ever got.
Wow.
Yeah, everything else, and then I was performing in the Comedy Store and the Improv.
And the Magic Castle.
The Magic Castle. I made a living out of the Magic Castle. I got lucky to perform 2 weeks a month there, so that was almost $300 a month, and back then you could live on that, and my wife was working. And, you know, it worked out great. And then I started, I was a magician for the Hertz rental car company. I was dressed in a yellow tuxedo, and I was the great Maroc Foo, which stood for "May I rent a Hertz car for you?"
Oh my God, Maroc Foo sounds like the number four at Panda Express.
You're right, and you know, and hold the soy sauce. And so I was the great Maroc Foo, and I would go to travel conventions dressed in this yellow thing and do magic tricks, then get people. And then I worked at the houseware show in Chicago for a company called Pick'em, where I would do magic tricks with their pots and pans to bring people in. So I somehow
Pick'em
always,
is the name of the guy who makes the Maroc Foo.
I think so. And so I just was lucky enough. I was, you know, people used to tell me they would hire me just so I would stop calling them.
You were ruthless.
I would not stop.
Hey,
just
that's
hire
how
me.
That's how we book guests on this podcast.
Apparently, because you guys didn't leave me the F alone.
I'm sorry. But I knew we were gonna have a good time.
No, we are.
Were you good? You worked at the Magic Castle.
No.
But like they don't hire just bums off the street.
No, I got good. Once again, I had a guy by the name of Peter Pitt who worked with my act and taught me what I needed to do. But here's the thing, here's what you learn. And the day I became a host as a talk show, I was going to be a talk show host, and I know what the hell I was
like
doing.
Like Sally Jesse Raphael?
Yeah, you know, or more like Donahue at the time.
Okay, yeah.
And so I was doing a show called The Home Show on ABC, and there was a comedian by the name of Howie Stevens who was doing segments, and he couldn't make it one day. I filled in and got him bumped out of the job.
What?
And so, and I'll tell you what I did.
Showing up.
He took a trip to Europe when he should have done this last thing. It was a prize where they were going to give $10,000 to some lady in Virginia, or West Virginia. So they called me up and said, "Will you do it? It's a one-off. Only one time Howard's going to get the job when he comes back." So we go to this lady's house and surprise her, knock on the door. "You won $10,000. It's live." And she goes, "You know, I've always wanted to meet Gary Collins, the host." And I said, off the top of my head, live TV, "You know what we got to do? We got to fly you back so Gary can hand you this check instead of me." And now at the time, I figured, well, screw it. They're either going to fire me or shoot me.
It was a one-time deal. Who cares?
And
were you bummed, by the way, that she wasn't pumped to get the check? She was more like her focus was on...
No, it was on both. She was glad to win the money, but she wanted to meet the host, which I get.
Yeah.
And I said it, and the exec producer, Woody Fraser, said in my ear, "Nice job, Mark." So they flew us back, and they let me be a part of that. And the next day, they fired Howie, and I became a regular on the show.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
So it almost looks like you had this evil plan the entire time.
And I had nothing to do with it, but I just was thinking on my feet. You know, when you get one shot, you got to go for it.
Sure.
And through that, they used me as a regular for the next couple of years, and then I became a host of the show. So he said to me, "Gary's going to be gone for a week. Will you host the show for a week?" I said, "Sure." So on Monday, I had read all the material over the weekend, and I crammed my head full of stuff.
Yeah.
And I went out there, instead of letting the people talk, I took charge in a bad way. Mm-hmm. And the network, ABC, went to Woody and said, "We want him off the show. He sucks. We don't want him hosting the rest of the week." And Woody, in my defense, cleared a desk, went nuts, and said, "I believe in him. We're sticking with him." So Woody calls me that night and goes, "Okay, you really did a horrible job, but here's what you need to do. You need to study that material, and then tomorrow when you come in, we need to have a conversation." I said, "Okay, fine." So I study all the material, and we're about 30 seconds to air, and he's in my ear, and he goes, "Did you read all the material?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Okay, now forget about it and go out and have a conversation," which is what I did, and it was the day I became a host. because you have to listen.
Yeah.
It's not about you talking. It's about letting the other people shine and have a conversation. It was the day I became a host. At that point on, Woody became the exec producer of a show I did called What Would You Do?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and talk about incestuous things.
Most addictive theme song ever, by the way.
Yes.
You know what? Let's take a second to sing it here. What would you do?
So Woody's daughter wrote that song, as a matter of fact.
What?
Yeah.
No kidding.
And so I became a regular. I became a regular then doing that and filling in and all that kind of stuff. And now Woody does a new show called Home and Family, and I filled in the other day, and now I'm filling in on that. So you know, the people that you meet throughout your career, and I've known Woody Fraser almost 30 years, they keep calling you. He's 80 years old, still out there producing television shows, and I'm his go-to guy. He still calls me
up. Really is true what they say about people want to work with people that, A, they like, but B, they know are going to deliver.
And
right?
He started Mike Douglas on the Mike Douglas Show. He started Good Morning America. He started a show called That's Incredible. Here's a guy who's a pioneer, has been doing
so
TV.
So, like, he's done nothing in his career.
Nothing.
Maybe you'll give him a break one day.
You want to start naming some reputable shows?
And so I've been lucky enough to work with people like that who keep calling. And to this day, I'll be 64 in November, and when people say to me, you got the job, I always go, that's insane, because there's a million people out there trying for the same gig. Why did I get it, you know? Yeah, and there's a period of time where initially you're up against a million people. Now I've been doing it for so long, they want me for, you know,
you're at the top of the list.
Well, no, people grew up with me, and, you know, I'm doing shows on Comedy Central, and I'm getting ready to do a show next week on the True Network called Friends of the People. And
nice.
So now people, I did a music video with, you know, a big rock band because
incredible.
People want to meet me because they grew up watching me, and so it's just fun.
Is it crazy for you? I mean, like you said when you first sat down, we talked about still the how popular Double Dare is in the minds of so many people. Have you just gotten adjusted to understanding that?
And, yeah, finally. It took a long time.
Yeah.
It took a very long time.
I mean, because that's got to be weird to, like, you think back to Jack Benny, like, in things that shaped your childhood. Mm-hmm. You're doing that for... You did that for
another
other people.
Generation, which is very cool. And now I'm in the middle. We're going to be doing a one-man show that opens in Bloomington, Indiana next April called The Life and Slimes of Mark Summers. Working title, it may change. But,
my God.
We're going to do 90-minute, no intermission. We've got some very cool things we're doing. We start in Indiana. We go to the Adirondacks to a theater. We go to Chicago. And we're looking for an off-Broadway theater right now.
Mark, that's a brilliant idea.
Well,
yeah.
I didn't think anybody cared. But I did summer stock about 3 summers ago. I played Vince Fontaine in Grease.
Nice.
And these two kids...
You know, I played Danny Zuko in Grease my sophomore year of high school.
I can see you playing
Danny. I quit football to play Danny Zuko in Grease.
And it was the best move you ever made.
I'd want to be an actor.
Absolutely. Yeah. Changed lives.
I played the football in the pep rally scene. Quite good at it, though. I had a tight spiral. Good.
What was your line again?
Whee!
Yep, there it is. Yep. So I'll never forget it.
Whee! Yeah, it was good.
And so I met these two young guys, are now in their late 20s, who said we should write a show. And these guys, one is writing his first Broadway show, one is getting ready to star in his third Broadway show. And they wrote the script, and we actually have people who are investing in this thing. And
why would you not think that people...
Because when you're living it, you don't think anybody cares.
And you're not tracking numbers. You're not looking at, like, the Mark Summers pop, like your IMDb chart. Or
I have no idea. I don't care about that stuff.
You're just trying to make the best show possible, and then after you do it, on to the next show.
Exactly. I'm a working performer, hopefully. And so the fact that anybody would want to spend money and come and see a story about this is fascinating.
Also,
to me.
The live aspect is just, I mean, like, could you be you're so comfortable in front of people, which I want to ask because when you started doing a radio DJ, that was your first maybe introduction to entertaining people?
Well, no, I started doing birthday parties as a magician when I was like 11 years old.
What?
Yeah, I started doing that. I learned magic. And so I used to work and when I went to high school at a place called the Pizza Inn. And I got paid like $135 a week working Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights doing magic. So, you know, my girlfriend, Paula Van Ness at the time, she was like living in luxury because we were going out having dinner and buying her nice gifts.
Free pizza.
Yeah, well.
When you're that age.
But who did you know at that time who was making, you know, over $100 a week?
Nobody.
You know, we could do anything we wanted.
Yeah.
So
what were your tricks at 11?
You know, I did the
staying
typical,
up past 10 p.m.
Yeah, right.
Without wetting yourself.
I did the typical cut and restored rope and, you know, make things appear and disappear and all that, you know, whatever. So I guess, you know, still do it. But, yeah, it's just weird, you know, to go from magic to comedy to hosting, you know, with the warm-up stuff in between and then get some acting roles. And it's been a great life. You know, it beats working. I mean, I can't believe I got
paid. It's not a job.
To do all this stuff.
But you've always been comfortable in front of people.
Always.
I mean, so the magician that you started doing because it was... I mean, and that must have also like kind of blown the minds of parents because a lot of kids aren't. They're just, you know, socially awkward and whatnot. But here you are, like I have no problem not only like being in front of you adults, but also like showing you a skill set that you probably think I shouldn't have right now.
And every comedian that was on, from George Carlin to Bill Cosby, before he started doing all that stuff to women, I knew all their acts inside and out. I could perform their stuff because I listened to their records.
I was going
to
say, those were your influences. Right.
Yeah, I listened to, you know, Cosby was, you know, the king at the time. But, you know, comedians on the Jack Parr show and Johnny Carson would
Jack
be nothing.
Jack Parr hosted the Tonight Show before Carson.
Yeah,
right?
And Steve Allen before that.
Yeah.
And so, I would stay up. When my parents would go to bed, I would sneak back out and watch the TV and stay up. If Buddy Hackett was on the Tonight Show, funniest man I ever saw in my life, so I would watch him. So I would study comedians. That was like the most. And I worked at a summer theater, Starlight Musicals, when I was a kid. And any show that came in town, I would go see, and Jack Benny performed live, and I got to see and meet him. And, you know, they would do theater. They did Sound of Music, and they did Bye Bye Birdie. And, you know, I would force myself on people just to meet him to say, you know, how do I do? I want to do this.
Right.
How do I get to do this?
Yeah, because you see people on TV, and you go, and you think to yourself, like, well, that's a great job. That looks like a lot of fun. But you don't know how to do it.
I'm in Indiana. How the hell do I get to Broadway?
Right.
How do I get how do I do this? You know,
I've been to Bloomington, Indiana, by the way, to
do
stand up, and in the college town.
Yep.
And my first night there, I went out to the bar that was there, and this is now.
By the way, it's the bar.
No. There's a lot of activity.
There's a lot now. Yeah. This guy pulls me aside and goes, "Hey, just so you know, 1 in 4 girls in Bloomington has an STD." And then he proceeds to give me a visual demonstration, an example. And goes and starts pointing to girls in the bar and goes, 1, 2, 3, herpes. And points to a girl and she turns and she's like, what? And ended up being his girlfriend. So
lovely.
But I had a great time. Is that where you were born and raised? In that
Indianapolis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did, you know, magic on a couple of kids' shows and did disc jockey stuff in Elwood. And, but I knew early on that there was no show business life for me in Indiana.
Yeah,
and they sold Variety, the weekly Variety, down in, next to a place called the Indiana Theater. And I would take the bus down every Saturday, get the new one, read it cover to cover a dozen times until the next Saturday when I would go down. Because I would read about the auditions for Broadway shows. Or there was a place called Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio.
Yeah.
And I figured if I could just audition and perform at a theme park for the summer, that would be the – and I did it once. I went in an audition, and I got rejected.
What?
Yeah, they didn't buy me. It's funny. I put something like – I was in Chicago recently doing – I tour. I do Price is Right Live.
Yeah.
And we were doing that, and I made a mention that I auditioned for Cedar Point, didn't get in, and somehow the entertainment director got in touch with me and said, well, there's a job available this summer if you'd like to come in and do it, which I thought was cute.
You want to tear tickets.
Yeah.
No, that's where I started when I got out here after I graduated from USC. Of course, as you do with an acting degree, then you become a tour guide at Universal Studios Hollywood because that's the natural progression to being an actor.
Babe.
But quite honestly, it helps so much for stand-up purposes and for any sort of hosting stuff. Just because, again, you're having to think on your feet and you're in front of 300-400 people from all over.
When people came to CBS and I was a page, none of the other pages wanted to give tours. I wanted to give every tour because I got to perform for 45 minutes in front of, you know, 100 strangers.
I hope that people are listening to this podcast who are thinking to themselves, how do you get into the entertainment industry? What do you do? Because I'm listening to you tell these stories like, well, you just do it.
Just do it.
You get yourself into any job, any circumstance where, in your case, performing, hosting, talking, just to get the reps in, just so you're comfortable
and
with it.
And you have to be a pain in the ass, okay? The word no, I don't even hear that. Like, my wife always goes, I don't understand how you just... I go, look, that guy... I had a Jewish executive at NBC, and by the way, I'm a Jew, told me he would never hire me because I had a Jew nose, okay? And he said, until I got that Jew nose fixed, he would never put me on television. Okay? And here's my feeling. First of all,
you have a great nose.
Well, second of all, you're an asshole. Okay?
Yeah.
And you'll be fired, and there'll be somebody else sitting there. And like 6 months later, the guy was Joel Stein was the guy's name.
Wow. Never forget that shit.
Never forget that stuff, you know? And he's saying you got a Jew nose. So, you know.
Don't you wish you could have thrown some gack on him at that point?
Hadn't been invented just yet. But, you know, you just keep moving forward. And I, you know, that's the hardest part because in show business, 92% of the time, the answer is no.
Yeah. Right.
And you just got to move on and go, okay, well, that guy didn't see the talent. I'm going to move on. But I was more persistent than I was good. And then I finally got good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Isn't that true for most just starting out in any career? I mean, you get in. I mean, how many people, like Dave Chappelle, everyone says he was great at age 14, right? But he really blew up 8 years ago when Chappelle's Show hit, you know? So it's like.
I always say, if I would have gotten the audition for Double Dare when I first moved out, I wouldn't have gotten it because I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
But when I auditioned in, you know, 1986, I was ready, had all the experience behind me. So timing is important, but half the time you don't know that half the fun is getting there as you're going through it.
Yeah. As you're struggling and eating ramen every night.
Well, eating a lot of that, a lot of grilled cheese. And, you know, I got to tell you.
These are the good years.
Kraft macaroni and cheese used to be 12 cents a box. And my wife and I used to buy like a dozen boxes of Kraft macaroni and cheese and get some hamburger. And we'd eat the same crap every night because that's all we could afford. She was a dental assistant making $400 a week, and I was, you know, doing whatever I could depending where I was working, and you could barely squeak by. But, you know, and I didn't really start making good money. Well, you know, when I started doing warm-ups, and I was, as they used to call me, the king of warm-ups, I was making $100,000 a year doing warm-ups for a while.
Holy
shit. Yeah, I was doing a lot of shows. Yeah. I was doing Our Magazine on, I think it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I was doing Alice Tuesday night at CBS. I was doing What's Happening Now on Friday. I was doing Soap on Friday nights. And then on the weekends, I would do game shows, and Mondays would be my day off. But when I worked on Soap, because they paid overtime and I was an after member, I would make over $1,000 a night doing that.
That's great.
And then Alice paid
me a lot
like,
of mac and cheese.
It was a lot of mac and cheese. You know, and so I started. So you start making six figures asking people where they're from. you know, but you're working on Soap. I was working with Jay Johnson and Billy Crystal and John Biner, who were very helpful in these kinds of things. Yeah. You work on other shows. I worked on the TV show Alice, and, you know, other than Vic Tayback, everybody on that show was a pain in the ass and not nice and wouldn't interact with you. And,
is that, I mean, you've worked on so many sets with so many different crews and stuff, but I mean, that really is essential to also a show being successful. Yeah. Know, like the.
Don't be camaraderie.
Yeah, and don't be an asshole.
But, you know, it's like everybody, Linda Lavin and Polly Holiday didn't get along, and so Polly would say, read this when you introduce me, and then Linda would say to me, come here, what did she ask you to say? And I'd say, don't say that, don't say that. So she, like, would try to piss her off. My favorite one, Brian Keith, I don't know if you know who he is, an actor, used to do a show called Family Affair, and he was doing a pilot over 20th, and I was doing the warm-up, and I knocked on the door, and I said, excuse me, Mr. Keith, I'm doing the warm-ups, what would you like me to say about you? And he said, if they don't know who I am by now, fuck them. And he slammed the door in my face. I did the warm-up on the pilot of The Cosby Show.
What?
Yes.
Get out.
Yeah. At 4151 Prospect. It was done at ABC here before they moved to New York. I was the warm-up guy.
What, do you remember seeing that pilot just being like, this is going to...
Oh, insane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the producers, Marcy Carsey, and I forget the guy's name. He's one of the owners of the Red Sox.
Tom Warner. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were scared to knock on the door to go talk to Cosby. And I went, are you kidding? I knocked on the door. I said, hey, Bill, my name's Mark. I'm doing the warm-up. You know, what do you want me to say? But, like, everybody
then
was
good to meet you. Just do pudding jokes.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But he was very nice. And, you know, we did the thing. And it obviously became, you know, this massive hit. So I've been a part of some really interesting television.
You produced Wild and Crazy Kids.
Yeah, when it came back the second time, Woody and I did that together.
That's incredible.
So so you discovered Omar Gooding?
Hey, don't forget Donnie Jeffcoat.
By the way, that's
a name I just feel like has been ingrained in my mind because it sounds like such a host
made up name.
Made up name.
Nice
sounds
kid.
Sounds like a porn name. It sounds like just a great name that you want to like that.
Sounds like the white bad guy in an 80s movie. It's like, don't worry, the bully Donnie Jeffcoat's coming over here.
I ran into him in an airport, you know, now 15 years ago, and I guess he did some acting and stuff. Yeah. I don't know what happened to most of those kids. There weren't a lot of people, you know, Michael Malley, who is probably as good an actor as he is, I think is a better writer, producer. He's an amazing guy.
Sure.
Very, very talented. But there haven't been a lot of people who've, well, you know, I guess there have been from some of the sitcoms and stuff. Clarissa, she did well.
Yeah, right? Melissa Joan Hart and some of the kids from All That went on.
Now, I do want to get to the bottom of the, because I'm, you know, I've done a handful of hosting stuff, but nothing to the extent of what you've done. And I'm very curious about the audition process. And it's like, hated it. But Nickelodeon, when you got with Double, I mean, that was, when did they come out as a network?
Well, I used to.
You guys helped really build them up.
Double Dare put them on the map.
Yeah.
When my kids were little, like babies, we used to do the midnight and 2 o'clock in the morning feedings to a horrible cartoon puppet show, a puppet show called Pinwheel. And so that's how I discovered Nickelodeon.
Right.
I didn't know much about it. And as the story goes, Dave Garrison, who is a friend of mine and passed away last year, ventriloquist, was the person who got the call to go audition for Double Dare. He had decided that he wanted to be a producer and stop being on camera. So he called me up and said, there's this new network. It's called Nickelodeon. I don't know anything about it. They're doing a game show. Why don't you go instead of me? And I went instead of him and got the job.
Wow.
And so that was one of those another freaky things. They had auditioned 2,000 people in New York, didn't like anybody, came to L.A. I was the first guy to audition and got called back 3 times. And the way it happened was I knew they were going to start shooting in September. Show was going on October 6th. And I always, the one thing I did when I auditioned was I'd get the name of the casting director and the exec producer. Always got their name, wrote it down. And so I didn't, after the third phone call, didn't hear anything about it. And this was like mid-August.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Mike Klinghoffer at Nickelodeon Studios in New York. And I said, hi, Mike, it's Mark Summers. And he said, what can I do for you? And I said, well, have you guys chosen a host? And he goes, no, we're having problems. And I said, what's the problem? He said, we're trying to find out who's good with kids, because when they auditioned us, they had adults play the part of kids.
Right.
And I said, well, hell, I used to do magic shows, and I was really good with kids, and I was trying to sell myself as to why they should hire me. And he goes, no, that's not good enough. And I said, well, why don't you fly me and whoever the other guy is to New York, put us in a studio with kids, and let the best man win. And he said,
bring it on.
I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Call me back half hour later and said, what are you doing over Labor Day weekend? I said, flying to New York?
Yeah.
And he said, yes. So they flew us both to New York, and to this day, I don't know who the other guy was. And I
Mario Lopez.
Yes, he was too young.
Rest in peace, his Double Dare career.
And I went in and auditioned. This other guy auditioned, and the next day I got a phone call, and I got the job. And I said, Mike, after 2,000 people in New York and 1,000 people in L.A. and 3 callbacks and this audition, tell me why I got the job. And he said, at the end of his audition, he looked at the camera and said, do you guys want me to do anything else? And at the end of the audition, I said, we'll be back with more Double Dare after this. And because I threw it to commercial, they thought that was more professional and it changed my life.
Holy crap.
But you know what? I always watch game shows and I always knew then, and you threw it to commercial.
Yeah. I mean, hell, that's where some of the catchphrases come in. Like, we'll see you in 2 and 2.
2 and 2 and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I threw it to commercial, back with more Double Dare right after this. I got the job.
Holy shit.
It changed my life.
Okay. It's amazing when you break it down what little tiny things that set you apart from the other guy.
But it's the experience that got me there. Okay, I would have, at 22, not known to do that probably.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I would have, but
you'd have been like, guys, want to see a bird disappear out of a hat?
Well, yeah, exactly. Something like that. You know,
anybody
do magic
got any
tricks.
Kraft mac and cheese?
Yeah. Right. I mean, and so the fact that I threw the commercial, because that was the smart thing. Now, I was channeling Bob Barker, you know?
And you said when you were a page at CBS and you had some conversations with him, did he, I mean, give you, because he knew you were an aspiring host, did he give you any sort of...
You know who was the biggest mentor to me back then was a guy by the name of Bert Convy. Bert was doing a show called Tattletales, and I was a head page on it. And I used to sit in the dressing room when he was getting made up and just pick his brain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he had been a page at CBS, and there was a guy by the name of Art Linkletter who did a show called House Party.
Yeah.
Yep. And he used to bring on Bert Convy as the singing page, because Bert was a singer. And Bert was very kind and offered as much help as he possibly could.
That's fantastic.
So, you know, it's but interesting.
As much help as people want to throw you for Double Dare, that's such a new idea for a show that, like, you're really kind of having to, I mean, did they have the structure of the show kind of when they sit you down and go,
kinda.
Hey, kids are going to kind of...
But nobody who was working on the show had ever done a game show. I was the only one who had any game show experience.
Oh,
and
crap.
Keep in mind, I grew up just obsessing about game shows, and there was a show called Beat the Clock, which was a stunt show.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought this had elements of that, but the questions and the mess were something a little bit, you know, different. And so it was, you know, look, you can't recreate, and you can't even try to make that happen. Whatever was going on there between Klinghoffer and Dana Calderwood and our writer, Alan Silverberg, and myself and Robin and Dave, it just worked. It was kismet. It was synergy. It was something. And we all just, look, we couldn't believe that they were paying us to throw these green liquids at 11-year-olds.
Yeah,
every right.
Kids lost. Yeah, I mean, kids lost their minds. By the way, I remember watching the show. I went as crazy as the kids did in the studio audience, and I was like, I feel like Double Dare kids in a Double Dare audience is, I feel like, almost entirely reminiscent of an audience at an Oprah Winfrey taping in the mid 90s.
Oh yeah,
like when Oprah
on her favorite things episode.
Yeah,
that was every episode. Yeah,
I would agree, and that was the cool thing about it. You know, people couldn't wait to be there. And that energy sort of bled over into the studio audience and the audience at home.
And you had to test the stunts, I heard.
Right?
Because how do you figure out what's difficult?
You know
for
the story, obviously. Otherwise, you wouldn't walk me into it.
Well,
we used to test these things, and they were the most obscene things we had ever. I mean, everything became a dick joke or something. It was
ever
filthy.
Somebody pulling a flag out of a urethra?
Close. Because we would make it look like that, and we all laughed our asses off.
Yeah.
And what happened was. Master Control started to videotape these rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this was today, TMZ and YouTube, we'd be all over them.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God there was no social media back then, because I wouldn't be here today. I'd probably be in jail.
Well, we'd still have you on the podcast.
Thank you. And so this guy, Ken, I remember he was a videotape guy, somehow was taking these tapes and sending them throughout the building. And I get a phone call from Jerry Laybourne, president of New York, and she goes, "What in the hell's going on down there?" I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "These rehearsals are everywhere. You guys got to stop doing that stuff.
Kids are winning bikes by pulling flags out of dicks. What's going on over there?"
It was a stuff. But think about it. It was a bunch of grown-ups.
Yeah,
sure.
I never wanted to do a kid show, but I got an offer to host a show, and I was going to do it.
Yeah, yeah, you know. Turned down work.
Well, exactly. And so, I mean, listen, we had the best freaking time ever.
So the obstacle course was always, I feel like you start with that, because you're like, we have to have the grand finale.
Yeah.
Right. And but then all the little things of squirting blue juice into a bucket on somebody's head, and is that just all
icing on the cake? You know,
mm-hmm.
Well, we had the staff and the crew. Keep in mind that the crew, a lot of them, let's say, participated in extracurricular activities in the drug world.
Really, to think about sliding down a giant mouth, you have to be somewhat intoxicated inebriated of
some
kind.
More things than that was going on, but. You know, GAC was the street term for heroin, and so that's where that term came from.
Get out.
Yeah, and Nickelodeon didn't even know it. They went, "Oh, it's a funny name, GAC," and they put it out, and they go, "Hey, guys, I don't know if you know this, but that's a street term for heroin." So, I mean,
we're seeing our ratings spike in certain areas.
and that kind of stuff that went on all the time.
God.
And we had a cameraman. His last name was Farnese. I know his son, Greg, but he was funny as hell. And years ago, he used to host a kid show in Philadelphia. I never told this story. And the question was, how many states begin with the letter F?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was one, Florida.
Yeah. Right.
And he said to me, "Come here," and he goes, "Mark, they all do." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Fucking Indiana, fucking Ohio." So that was the crew.
Yeah.
And they were hysterical, you know, so awesome. You were laughing all the time.
Sure.
You know, we're doing a kid's show, and the cameraman's going, you know. It was hysterical.
Were there ever just some kids that literally, I mean, where you're like, because you pick these kids, I'm guessing it, random, right? Because they all
Oh, no, no. We had a full contestant department, and they would go to schools throughout Jersey, Pennsylvania, down through D.C. and up to New York, and test kids, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it was a full-time job.
Yeah, because you had to know something. And then,
they had to know something, to have an ounce of personality, at least, you know.
But, I mean, did you have any families that maybe tested well, or and then once they got there were just pains in the asses?
Oh, yeah, it happened all the time.
Oh,
especially when we started giving away, like, cars and stuff, because the father would want the car, the kid would miss obstacle number 7, and we'd have to separate the kids from the parents because the father was going to kill the kid
because
he missed the flag.
So you had, like, soccer moms, like insane soccer moms or like pageant parents.
Then. Yeah. Yeah. And then we started doing celebrity stuff. You know, we had the weirdest show was we had Lou Ferrigno against Weird Al Yankovic.
You had Lou Ferrigno against Weird Al?
Yeah. In fact, Ferrigno used to call me and go, "Mark, do you know who this is?"
I have a feeling.
He used to tell me I was in bad shape, and he used to try to sell me equipment. But Weird Al answered every question, and it was I couldn't get him to go a physical challenge. It was the most obscure stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember on the air, I said, "How do you know the answer to all these?" And he said, "Hey, man, it's my gig." I remember that was his line.
Yeah.
He was amazing.
He's
the nicest guy.
He seems very
intelligent.
Oh, my God.
I always seemed so overly impressed by your ability to articulate so many rules and so many details of the challenges.
I'm ask you a question. If you know the answer, I think the other team doesn't have a clue.
All that, but then
you can answer for double the dollars. But if you can't, you have to take.
That's just. I mean, that's muscle memory. It's right. I mean, but also the setting up the physical challenges. Because,
here's the deal on physical challenges. Yeah. You had to do it in 15 seconds or less because the kid's attention span is a nanosecond.
Yeah, right.
So I say you stand over there and say, "Here's what you got to do. You got to take the ping pong ball. If you get three in the bucket, first person gets that 20 points and control around. Good luck on your mark and set. Go." I mean, you had to be.
I didn't know how Red Bull wasn't sponsoring you because I was like, he's got to be on something to get all that info out. Like, it was just.
That was it.
It's called cocaine, Adam. Anyway, moving on.
And we had Jim J. Bullock host a show where Harvey and I were contestants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he thought he had to talk fast. And I said, Jim, just do your thing. Don't know. But he kept trying to emulate me, which made no sense whatsoever.
No.
I don't know why I talked faster, why I did whatever I did, but that cadence worked and it kept the energy going.
I was just
going
to say, the energy, it was huge because you can't set, the stakes were higher
when
you were moving that fast.
Oh, you had to. And the object is you wanted to get two physical challenges in before the first commercial break if you could, at least one.
Oh, really?
Okay, and then you had to do two after the commercial break. And then think about the obstacles. I had to, you know, here's what you got to do. You have to go around the one-ton hamster wheel. The flag will come down. You'll grab it and you'll win this. Tell them, Harvey, you know. And you had to keep it going.
Casio keyboard.
That's right.
Always
that's
a Casio keyboard.
That's it. It's a trip to space camp.
Yeah. What if it was just like a dog with one leg? You know, the kids are like, the fuck? What? A bowl of beefaroni.
I certainly want that. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That sounds great.
It was just fun. And, you know, it just became what it became. And there was nobody telling me what to do. It's just a rhythm. If you go back and look at the first 65, it was pretty awful. And I watched those shows religiously. Now, keep in mind, here's what we would do. We would tape five shows. Wow. We would then go back to my room and watch all five
study
shows,
the game tape.
Study the show,
yeah,
have dinner, go to the studio the next day. And we that was our routine every freaking day.
Wow.
We studied.
Holy crap.
We did this. Take time out here. You know, you should have done this. And our director sat there. Our producer sat there. I sat there. And we studied those shows.
Thank you for putting that time in.
No kidding.
It made a huge
making the effort to where it would be so easy to say, well, we're a kid show. Kids will watch
They'll
anything.
They'll like it regardless.
We
Let's
never
just go
phoned
on.
It in. We yeah. never phoned it in. And then we got up to do, we were doing sometimes six or seven shows a day.
No.
We got
wow.
that. We would shoot three upfront games, three obstacle courses, go to lunch, do three upfronts, do three obstacle
Mark, that
courses.
Seems insane.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. And so, but I knew those shows inside and out. And I knew, I got into a habit of saying, all right. And so that I wanted to stop saying all right. So I learned it by watching the show. It was filler, which you didn't need to have. It's like saying the word like today.
Sure.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't serve any purpose. Don't do it. And so the only way you realize that is if you watch the darn thing over and over.
And then, it's like with a comedian you know, doing a set and then listening to the...
every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you watch yourself. You start getting annoyed. Like, why the hell am I saying all right
yes.
so much?
Yes.
Yeah, and then you go back and fix it.
Did you think Drunk Double Dare would ever take form?
Oh, listen, we have the most fun. Unfortunately, we're not doing it this year. But
what?
I can't do it this year because Beer Week in Philadelphia, we do this thing called Dunkle Dare. It's Drunk Double Dare. Nothing is better. And I've done it 3 years in a row. And this year during Beer Week, my dear friend Bobby Flay is getting his star on the Walk of Fame, and he has asked me to come and be a part of that. And it's during the same week, and then I have another thing I have to do in L.A., so I sadly had to say no to Drunk Double Dare this
year. Well, I mean, when Bobby Flay comes a-calling.
Well, you say sadly. I mean, I can't imagine it's just the most fun ever, yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
are you kidding me? I mean, you can't even imagine, because it's people your age who grew up watching the show, and all they want to do is get messy. And they walk out of there shit-faced and full of green liquids. It's just insane.
And it's got to be fun to do the same show that's just so in you, but like to do it completely different. And
if you go online, there's a thing where I tell the audience to shut
Well, we've actually got it, and we got to play it, because I watched it the other day.
If the other team doesn't have a clue, you can dare them to answer for double the points, but be careful, because they can always double dare you back to four times the amount. Then you either have to answer that question or do what, Harvey?
That would be take the physical challenge.
That is correct. All right.
What a celebrity.
People
do
lost
me a favor
it.
And do not shout out any answers. Do not shout out any answers. We're going to play round
I
one
told
about
him,
10
yeah.
questions. Then we're going to take about a 15-minute break, do some pictures.
Because there's a big crowd there, right?
And
massive.
Round two,
and it's outdoors, so there's a lot of distractions.
Then we're going to play our bonus round and find out who the
people
winner
stand
is.
In line for
so
hours.
Here we go. Question number one. What is the oldest continually operating brewery in the United States, and where is it?
You were
Shut
nice.
The fuck up!
And the crowd goes wild.
Yes.
Because it's what I always thought about when I was doing the show. I did a thing when New York at a place called Joe's Pub. It was a night where it was the filthiest night of show business ever, and they reran an obstacle course, and I did the play-by-play as to what I was really thinking.
Mystery Science Theater,
yes,
but with Double Dare.
Yes, it's
awesome.
You know, Jesus, we told you how to do that. Get your fat ass up. That's, you know, that kind of stuff. And the crowd goes, you know, because there's something unique about watching your childhood hero say the word fuck.
Of course, yes, there absolutely is. I mean, you're talking about why Saget's, you know, found a new level of popularity.
And it just cracks me up every year and then never gets old. For some reason, people love it. So I don't know. It's just, look, if you guys want to keep coming to this stuff, I'll keep doing it.
Sure, why not? You're involved. So after Double Dare,
I quit.
Really?
Yep, I quit.
Was there any particular reason?
Well, yeah. Here was the deal. I started the show, I was 34. All of a sudden, I'm in my early 40s, and, you know, I'm still throwing green liquids at 11-year-olds. Mm-hmm. At the same time...
Outside of the studio.
We toured. We did 40 personal appearances a year for 8 years. We would sell out the Palace of Ormond Hills, 16,000 people on a weekend. Yeah, I was a rock star for kids.
No,
we'd sell
kidding.
Out. Yeah, we played, you know...
You were the Wiggles before the Wiggles.
I was. I was Barney before Barney. And it was insane. And so I was living in New York... with a house in L.A. My family was here.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing a talk show on Lifetime called Biggers and Summers. First it was called Our Home, then it was Biggers and Summers. And then on the weekends, I would go out and do these personal appearances. And my son, who must have been, I'm trying to think when this was, 96, so he was like 13, 14.
Yeah.
He came to me and said, Dad, how come every weekend you're with somebody else's kids, but you're never with us?
Oh, man.
I quit. The next day I went to Jerry Laybourne and said, I'm done.
Because how do you... I mean, that's when it all hits you. Like, I'm missing my son growing
up. I was having the best time of my life, but my son was trying to figure out why I was signing autographs. We went to Disneyland once, and we got stopped by, you know, 100 kids who wanted to take pictures and photographs. And my daughter, I remember, said, when Dad gets done, we'll go to the next ride. And Matthew was frustrated. And I understood it. It's weird to grow up with a father who's sort of in the public eye.
Yeah, who's sort of a father to all these other kids. And it
was time.
Yeah.
I had done it for 8 years.
Sure.
We had done everything I wanted to do. I was afraid I was going to get typecast as a kid show host, and so it was just the right time to move on.
How soon after that did Food Network come a knocking?
Well, it was about 3 years after that.
Yeah.
I did Lifetime for a couple years, and then I went in to pitch another person, Roseanne Gold, on a show. And while they were there, they weren't interested in Roseanne's show. They were more interested in getting me involved on the network. Because somebody who was an executive at Food Network at the time had been a Food Network or had been a Nickelodeon exec, and knew I had some sort of following. And next thing I know, I was doing a show called It's a Surprise. It was a show about surprise parties. Surprise was nobody was watching, but but then they had piloted or done a couple of specials with a show called Unwrapped, and they showed it to me and they said, "What do you think?" And I said at the time, Biography was the number one show on A&E, and I said, "I think what Biography is for A&E, Unwrapped could become."
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And so
that's it's a fascinating show, and it's something. It's a topic you don't realize you're interested in until
until you see it.
You know what I mean? Yeah, because I mean, I remember one time I was up in Sacramento doing a show, and they have the Jelly Belly Jelly Bean Factory.
That's right. I know exactly where it is.
Yeah, in Fairfield, California.
Yep.
And I went there, and I was fascinated by how they created jelly beans.
Yes, well, especially that place. I mean, they do it right in all the different flavors and all that stuff.
Right.
Well, and Brad's great grandparents used to make jelly beans.
Well, so obviously. Look at me. Chocolate making is in my blood.
Stop it. And so I've been lucky enough to put, basically, you know, I put Nickelodeon on the map with Double Dare, and it was Emeril who started it, and myself at the time, believe it or not, Unwrapped for many years was the number one show on Food Network. I was Guy Fieri before Guy Fieri was there.
That's
and, you know, so I've been fortunate enough to have two major shows on two major networks and put them on the map, so which is pretty darn cool.
Now, I'm very curious in that downtime, when your son comes to you and says that and you quit Double Dare, are you even thinking of wanting to, I mean, you're not thinking you're going to be done working,
no.
but how much time are you like, all right, I'm going to be dad now before I jump back on the saddle? And
well, look, you still got to work. You got to pay the bills.
Yeah, sure.
And people have this false impression that I'm very wealthy. I'm not. I've always basically worked in cable television, so I've never made a lot of money.
But it sounds like the Food Network thing came to you.
I wasn't seeking it out, and that's often how things happen.
Yeah.
You know what? It just evolves, and you have to you know, play that role in that game and, you know, take it as it comes, because a lot of times when you go after stuff, it doesn't happen, and then out of nowhere a phone call happens. And I always wanted to host a talk show, and so we had just moved into a new house here in L.A., and then I get this phone call from Lifetime saying, do you want to host a talk show? And literally, we're emptying boxes into this new house, and I looked at my wife, and she said, just go do it. I know that's what you always wanted. So I commuted. I was in New York 4 days a week and L.A. 3 days a week. For 2 years doing the talk show.
What kind of things would you cover on the talk show?
Well, we started off when the home show went off.
Yeah.
They did research and found out that there was still an audience. So I did a show called Our Home, where we did, you know, cooking and home repairs and stuff like that. Really not in my element, but I had been on the previous show. And then I filled in. There was a show called Live from Queens with a lady by the name of Sissy Biggers. And we just hit it off. And they fired the other person and they changed the show to Biggers and Summers. And for the next year, we hosted that.
So basically what I'm learning is that you Mark Summers, get people fired.
Yeah, a lot of times. You know why?
I'll
give you the best advice ever. Never get sick and not show up to a job. Because there will be somebody there who's going to take your job. And I've gotten so many jobs by filling in at the last minute, because they look and see. There was another show. When Biggers and Summers got canceled, I moved back to Los Angeles, and I didn't have a job. They still owed me money. I actually got paid for the next 6 months for not working, which is always one of my favorite gigs.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And there was a show called Great Day America on some really tiny cable network. And it's now Ion, and it was called something else before that. And a guy by the name of Michael Young, who I knew for years, did a show called Kids Are People Too on ABC, was the host and the exec producer. And he couldn't be there for a week, and I filled in. And the network called and had Michael removed from the show, and I became the host on that show. It's happened numerous times. I mean, there's a guy who owned the show, was the host of it, and the producer, and they asked him to step down because they thought, you know. And it was very nice that when I just filled in on Home and Family, by the way, Mark Steinis is a great host. After I did a week, they now said, every time Mark's not here, do you want to fill in? And the answer is yes, because I'm not looking for a full-time job right now, quite honestly.
Yeah, sure.
I'm concentrating on this, you know, one-man show, and a few other things. I'm exec producing three shows right now. We're doing Restaurant Impossible on Food Network.
So good.
I'm doing a show, a shark special for Discovery that we shot in Havana, Cuba.
Whoa. What was that like?
Oh, my God. That was the coolest thing ever.
Did you go into the cage and swim?
Look, I'm a Jew. Really? We hire people
to
do this.
Yes. Please tell me that little exchange of dialogue is the opening to the whole series. Yeah. Mark, are you going in? I'm a Jew. This week on Shark Summers.
No. I did all the above water stuff. Didn't care to go in those sharks. You know.
I mean, isn't the list of famous Jewish explorers just the
smallest books in the world, right?
Really?
So, we have a new show going on the True Network called 6 Degrees of Everything that I'm doing with the Fine Brothers.
I have a friend of mine who's actually writing on that show with you.
Who's that?
Danny Fernandez.
Danny.
Yeah.
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 There you go, man. Funny guy. Yeah. That's fantastic. So, so I've got three shows that I'm exec producing.
So you can't stay not working. I mean, just having your hands
My wife would love me to stop doing something, but
you wouldn't be you, though.
I couldn't. What would I do? I don't have hobbies.
What would you do?
Golf.
Yeah, that's a question.
there was one more thing that I personally wanted to bring up with you, because my dad has OCD.
Oh.
And
usually it's handed down.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
But his whole thing is, and you famously went on Dateline, you went on Oprah, and you talked about your struggles with OCD.
Yeah, just like you did with your shows, I feel like you put that on the map as well. Yeah.
I was a national spokesman for 3 years.
Did you feel a responsibility to do that, or did you just...
It was the right thing to do. It screwed up my career. It put me out of the business for a couple of years. In fact, the way the Food Network thing... actually came to happen with me actually getting the job was calling Judy Girard, who was the head of programming, and saying, since you fired me from the Food Network, I'm sorry, from Lifetime, I haven't been able to work because of this cloud around me with OCD.
Yeah.
And I said, I will pay you to get me back on television. And that's kind of what happened.
Wow.
And so there's many stories in The Naked City as to how you get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
But to this day, when somebody walks up to me and says, you changed my life because I didn't know what I had,
right.
That's good. Mm-hmm. But I was supposed to be the host of Hollywood Squares, yeah. The Tom Bergeron version,
right.
And got fired from that show because they spread rumors that I was impossible to work with because of my OCD. So there's the, you know.
But then nothing could be further from the truth if you look at, like, yes, you had OCD, but then you hosted Double Dare, which,
yeah, right.
Is the, which is the messiest damn show on and in the history of the world.
There's so many bullshit lies on the internet about how I yeah. hated every minute of it, and yeah. And then I, you know, none of that is true. I had the best time. There was never a problem. Yeah. I enjoyed every moment of it and all that stuff. So the whole OCD thing has gotten blown out of proportion.
Sure.
It still affects my life, I will tell you that. I
right.
don't think you're ever cured. I no. always say I'm like, you know, 82% cured. You know, I have trouble reading things over and over again. I don't like going into supermarkets because I get stuck on an aisle having to read packages and stuff
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of know how to deal with it better now. But it's one of yeah. those... It has to do with serotonin in the brain, and
you live with it. And
yeah.
Like my dad's, like it kind of like Tourette's. There's different sort of types of OCD. There's a tics to it.
Yep.
Like my dad's whole thing is the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fridge has to be a certain way. And mm-hmm. to this day, if you give me a jar of mayonnaise, I know exactly where to put it in the fridge. Because you know it's like, well, I didn't want to, you know, have a fight that night. So, but. And I watched the Dateline special with you, and the thing that people have to remember, and you pointed out so well there, is that OCD people know what they're doing is insane.
Oh, yeah.
They are completely aware of it.
Oh, yeah.
And then
you can't
stop it.
No.
That's amazing for me.
One of the best interviews I ever did, I did an hour with Howard Stern.
Oh, my God.
Talking about OCD.
Yeah.
It was fascinating because he kept saying he didn't have it when indeed he does have it.
Yeah. Right.
And probably the smartest broadcaster ever.
I think
so,
right?
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Yeah. He's brilliant. My buddy turned me on to him about 8 years ago, and it's changed. I mean, especially doing this podcast, like the same way you, you know, watch these guys growing up to like learn from, it's like you can't learn from a better person as far as interviewing.
Well, the mm-hmm. thing that's fascinating was, you guys know who Steve Allen is, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So Steve Allen was the original host of The Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. As he got older, he became this curmudgeonly, God bless America, let's get rid of sex and violence kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he had created a VCR, God help us, that took the smut out of programming. Now, I don't know how the hell this thing worked. But so I'm filling in. I had a period of time where I was out of work, and I got called. This is another interesting story. This is weird. You guys find a pattern here. I had a book called Everything in Its Place, and I was going around promoting it. Mm-hmm. And I was up in Seattle, Washington.
My hometown.
Really?
Yeah.
Great place.
You love it?
So I was on Como. K-O-M-O.
Yeah, of course.
And
did you meet Steve Poole, our weatherman?
Yes.
Yeah. Celebrity. We were just talking about weathermen celebrities the other day, and
He was
the Tom Hanks of weather.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was David Letterman of weather.
Yeah.
And
he was the Mark Summers of weather.
Yeah. And so I was up there and being interviewed about my book.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, the general manager comes out and says, can I talk to you for a minute? I went, sure. So he took me to his office. He closed the door. I said, I've been in broadcasting long enough to know that when you're called in the general manager's office and they close the door, they're going to fire you. But I don't work for you. So what do you want?
Yeah.
And he said, the guy's show you were just on, that guy just got fired. Do you want his show? And I said, well, what makes you think I can do drive time radio? He said, I could just tell you know what you're doing. I said, well, I don't have a job right now. I'm promoting this book. I said, I got to think about that.
Yeah.
So I went home and talked to my wife about it. And I said, you know, it's Seattle. I don't know. So I called the guy up and I said, let me do a week and see if I'm any good at it. And if I'm good at it, then let's have a conversation. Well, I flew back up there. And by Wednesday, they offered me a full-time job doing drive time on Como. So let me finish the story. So
yeah.
They offered me the job. First, they said I didn't have to be in Seattle every day. They said I could split it up. I could be in L.A. like 4 days a week and then Seattle one, and then it became 3 and 2 and then more time up there. And then I said, well, if I get an opportunity to do a TV show, can I keep the radio show and still do the TV show? And then they said no, and I said, okay, I'm not taking the gig. So I walked away from it. But one of the people that I interviewed that week was Steve Allen because he was talking about this VCR that took smut out of TV.
Yeah.
So at the time, he had come out and on a rant about how much he hated Howard Stern.
Okay.
So I got him on the air because he'd go to the opening of an envelope, and if some DJ calls him in Seattle and says, I want you on, he'd go, of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, Mr. Allen, I'm a big fan, and, you know, grew up watching you on all these shows, all this kind of stuff. I said, I just got to ask you a question before we get in about your VCR. What's that? I understand that you don't like Howard Stern.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, tell me what Howard Stern does for a living. And I said, I think he's one of the best broadcasters ever. And he goes, really? He's not funny. He's not entertaining. And he's filthy. And I said, well, that's your opinion, sir. But I said, this is funny coming from a man who introduced Lenny Bruce to America. He hung up on me.
Oh, I would take that as a feather in your cap.
Oh, I was so proud of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I called him on it.
Yeah.
Because Lenny Bruce at the time was the filthiest comedian.
Absolutely.
And Steve Allen introduced him on the Steve Allen show.
Mm-hmm. On your show. Yeah, that's
and so,
a bigger endorsement.
Fast forward the tape 40 years, I called him out on it, and he didn't like that, and he said, I got to go, and hung up. So I'm probably most proud of that moment of anything I've ever done in show business.
A little bummed that you didn't stay up to Seattle and be integrated into my childhood earlier than Double Dare. I would have been a fan of Double Dare during the time, and everyone would have been like, you love Double Dare. I'd be like, but you don't know, man. I knew Mark Summers before Double Dare. Drive Time Seattle.
I loved radio, by the way. I love radio because it's spontaneous. Sure. I would go there. That show, we would air from 3 to 7, I think. We were doing Drive Time. And I would get in the studio at 9 o'clock in the morning with no show, and I was there with the producer, and we'd read the newspaper, and we'd book people on the show that morning. And
wow.
It was so much fun every day.
Yeah, I got to be honest. You have every market cornered here in this business, but I feel like that – I mean, maybe, and you're so natural on these forums and like hearing your own Eliza's and just other interviews. I feel like that's the next – move for you,
fun.
Maybe.
Well, Sajak bought a couple of radio stations out in Maryland where he lives. Pat and I have become very good friends. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's a huge fan of Restaurant Impossible. And a few weeks ago, he actually came and spent 2 days with us in the middle of a shoot. Because he said nothing could be further than what I do. You know, I go in and do 5 shows in a day and go home, and it's all structured. We know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And he saw what we do, which is we have no idea what the hell we're doing. We have a restaurant owner who needs help, and Robert Irvine comes in, and God help you trying to tell Robert to do anything. He does whatever the hell he wants.
Sure.
And, you know, Sajak's head was spinning. He couldn't believe.
How is Sajak, what you see is what you get.
He's
on TV.
He's nice. And by the way, maybe one of the funniest humans
what?
On the planet.
Pat Sajak?
Oh, my God. You guys have no idea.
No.
He is beyond hysterical. What? He has the best sense of humor.
Dry, sarcastic.
Well, watch us on... We have Twitter battles every now and then.
What?
Go on Twitter.
My head just exploded.
And watch... We did it the other night. You go on and watch what Sajak and I do on Twitter.
Where you just make fun of Trebek? Or what do you guys do?
Yeah, we make fun of each other.
That's incredible.
But yeah, and people go, oh my God, Mark Summers and Pat Sajak are on Twitter now screaming at each other. You know, we're just laughing.
Do all the hosts... Do you have like a host? Like, is it you, Woolery, Trebek, Sajak,
I wish,
Barker?
But not. Most of those people, shall we say, aren't as nice as you would like to think they are. Pat and I are friends. I live in Philly a lot of the time. He's got a daughter who goes to school at Princeton. He called me up, said, let's go have dinner. We had dinner. I invite him. So we talk, we Twitter, we email, we text, we, you know, that kind of stuff. I've known Barker for years. You know, he's like 90 years old, and he is who he is. You know, Woolery, we all know each other.
Yeah.
Well,
it's kind of like the fraternity of stand-up comics, where if someone walks up to me and says, hey, my name's so-and-so, I'm a stand-up comic, I immediately have that in common
with
them. And we could talk about things.
Yes.
And I would have a feeling it's the same way with hosts.
Kind of.
Where
some are not, you know, like I can tell you stories of Barker where they wanted to do a TV guide cover with other game show hosts, and he refused to do it, you know, because he said, I'll do my own cover, but I won't do it with other people, you know.
Yeah, that
and
says
he,
a lot.
Well, and he has, you know, on his shirts, he had embroidered WGMC, World's Greatest MC. That's what it said on his...
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really, Bob, stop it.
Not even Superman put that on his cape.
No, you know, so Bob had a little ego that wouldn't fit in the room. Good for him, you know, a very talented man, but please. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but guess what? Oprah gave away just as many cars, Bob. So.
Yeah.
And she's not bragging.
I did that show a couple of times, and you know that was amazing. When you're sitting there with Oprah, and you go, "What in the heck?" You know, it's so funny. I did the Tonight Show with Leno, I did Oprah, I did Howard Stern, but the most frightening thing I ever did was throw out a first pitch at Fenway Park.
What?
Okay, that was like, oh my God, I better get this thing across the plate.
I'm sure, because you've seen the horror videos,
oh
right? Did you see 50 Cent not too long ago?
Yeah. Oh my God, you would think that.
And
you know,
and you know that as a celebrity, you know that yours, if you messed it up, like,
because
like sometimes they have someone comes out and it's like, he represents the PTA. He's the president of the PTA. Okay, well, if he grounds it, then no one gives a shit.
No.
But if Mark Summers doesn't get it to the plate, you know that that's going to be a viral video.
So I practice for 3 months. I would go. I do everything I do obsessively.
Yeah.
And so I would stand, I would find a professional major league mound and just throw 25 balls a day, okay? And the morning of that thing, I got up and went to Brookline, Massachusetts, and found a field, and I couldn't have anybody catch it. So I'd throw, I went and bought like 20 balls. Mm-hmm. Threw 20 balls, got them. Threw 20 balls, got them. Threw 20 balls, got them. I was supposed to be at the stadium at 5 o'clock. I got there at like 2 in the afternoon. And I asked if I could warm up.
Yeah.
And I went to the game the night before and asked if I could just go out to the mound just to see just what they said. No way, no. It ain't happening. So I get there at 2 o'clock, and I said, can I warm up? And they said, well, with one of the ball girls. I went, oh, great. So I start throwing the ball. This girl, I had to tell her to slow down. She threw the ball so freaking hard. She was killing my... And then, so they said, run out, take your time walking out to the mound because we have a lot of things we want to say. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I'm going to run out there because when are you going to be on the pitcher's mound at Fenway Park?
Yeah.
And your picture's behind there and the crowd's right. going crazy, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, thank God I got it across the plate. Oh, but, you know, yeah.
That's, I mean... I mean, especially if you're a sports fan, but also just mm-hmm. knowing the backlash that could come from making yeah. a bad pitch.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Rachel Ray was there the week before, and she threw a strike, so I went, oh, Jesus, pressure. Oh,
she's
that's
like, always... I did it in 10 minutes or less.
Yeah. Like, yeah. and other things.
That's
yeah.
always the most frustrating. I think, like...
That's funny.
Thank you.
I think,
come on,
like,
Brad, stay on top of things.
I think, like, as a dude, something about throwing out the first pitch, that's, like, one of those barometers of where you are as a man.
Oh,
like,
yeah, man.
It used to be like, could you hunt for your family? Now it's like, can you throw out the first piss, pitch at Wrigley?
Well, you know, and look.
Yes, I said throw out the first piss. I got that.
Yes.
But whatever.
That's what that was exciting. Being on the Tonight Show, you always hope to be on. I wanted to be on with Johnny, but was mm-hmm. on with Jay.
Well, but can we just briefly talk about that?
You can talk about that.
You and Burt Reynolds.
Yep.
Had you ever met Burt Reynolds?
Never.
Okay. So you had no... Did you know anything about him?
I know he was nuts.
Okay.
and he was going through all sorts of problems at the time because mm-hmm. he was going through this divorce with Lonnie Anderson.
Right, right.
And so he was pressured. Yeah. And he was having a bad night.
He was not... He just wasn't in a playful mood.
Not at all.
Although what he did seemed playful to the people who were watching. They're like, this is probably scripted.
Keep in mind that I had been booked on the show for a year and kept getting canceled. So now I'm backstage, and Bert's going crazy, and he's supposed to do two segments, then I'm supposed to go on, and then Carrot Top's supposed to go on, okay? So Bert's kicking.
Boy, Mary fuck kill on that one.
Yeah.
Burt Reynolds, Mark Summers, Carrot Top.
Ready? And so here's what happens. Bert's kicking ass, so they go three segments, so they come backstage, and they say, we're going to have to cancel you, Summers. And my publicist at that point went, bullshit.
Yeah.
And he handled... Jason Alexander at the time, and he said, if you ever want Jason Alexander on the show again, you better put Summers on. So they bumped Carrot Top to put me on. Okay.
Mark Summers, more popular than Carrot Top. Yeah.
Can you imagine the guys backstage? He goes, Summers, Carrot Top. Nobody knows who the hell either one of these people are. So, but because I had some clout behind me, I got on.
Right.
And then it just turned into a pig fuck. It was yeah. just.
By the way, and he yes, whatever you think pig fuck is,
yes.
that's what it is.
It's Burt Reynolds and Mark Summers
in a pie fight.
Yeah. Well, before that, he had jabbed at you about you were talking to Jay, so you had your back turned to Burt Reynolds. Mm-hmm. He made some comment about you. He just was under his breath making some comments.
Yeah.
You're trying to acknowledge
water
him.
On me.
He poured water, but you were trying to like acknowledge him. But you're also like, "Hey, man, I'm talking to Jay because now it's my turn."
You did your segment. Let me do mine.
Right. Now he's talking to you, and then he says something like, "Oh, hey, have your back turned to me." So then you turn to him, and then he says, "Oh, what?" And he made some comment about you doing something a kid show.
Yeah.
And then you made a comment to him. I think about his
wife. He said, "Who tells you have obsessive compulsive disorder?" I said, "My wife." By the way, I'm still married. Okay. And the audience went, "Whoa."
To a guy who's just going through a divorce. Well, the most high-profile divorce in the country at the time.
So he pours water.
In his lap.
Yes, in my lap. And I go to put and he straight arms me and he knocks his porcelain cup in my face. I thought he had broken my teeth. I don't know what's going on.
You immediately cat reflex, like it was quick, tried to go tit for tat and throw water. And he stiff arms your water glass, almost hits your face.
And Jay says to me, "Welcome to late night TV." And I say, I was doing this nice little show. And I said, "I used to do Win, Lose, or Draw all the time." And he goes, "Funny, I don't remember." And then he put his hand on mine and I said, "Don't touch me." Okay. And then the audience went, "Whoa." And it's
real at this point.
This is all real.
Yeah.
And the next thing I know, I see a glass of water in front of me and I poured it all over him. And the audience, they stood up. I got a standing ovation. Okay. You never see that because they don't shoot the audience, but they stood up. And
what if you'd taken out Double Dare goggles and given it to him before you poured the water on him?
Well, it was and then he said to me, "I deserve that." And I said, "You did." He said, "Yes, as I was saying to your wife the other night." I mean, it got to be ridiculous. It got to be like that. Yeah. Next thing I know, there's pies out there, and we get into a pie fight.
Yeah. Oh
and
God.
So, I remember getting in the car, and I called my wife on the cell phone, and I said, either the best thing in the world just happened
right.
or the worst. I didn't know. And, of course, they started – at the time, Dave had beaten Jay every night. Mm-hmm. And that was the first night Jay tied Dave.
Are you serious?
No, it was the first night that because they promoted. I wasn't out of the studio 5 minutes. By the time I got home, they were saying, watch Burt Reynolds go crazy on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
But they didn't show the whole thing, okay?
Right.
So that was crazy, and I couldn't tell. Well, the next day in the New York Post, it says, Burt goes berserk on Tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm on Entertainment Tonight. I'm on every show. People are calling me.
Because they all want to hear that it was real, and they want to hear that, like,
well, that's
you
it. And I said, I'm not that good an actor. I couldn't rehearse that. Yeah. You know, that, there's a classic thing where Don Rickles and Johnny Carson got into this thing with a hot tub and all that stuff. And I was on a plane with Rickles once. He told me it was all set up. And so, you know, which I didn't know. And everybody thought this was set up. And I went, Jesus, I wish it was, but it wasn't.
But,
and so Jay calls me the next day and goes, hey, what was going on with him? Why do you think he was doing that? You know? And I was like, well, Jesus, I don't know, man. It was your show.
Your show.
Right. And at the end, we tried to pie Jay, and Jay was a pussy. He should have taken the pie. Johnny would have taken the pie.
Someone isolate that audio, please.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Johnny would have taken it, but Jay ran, you know. Mm-hmm. Jay was new in the game, so what can I tell you? But anyway, I mean, it's those kinds of experiences that I've had that have kind of, you know, I keep reinventing myself, sometimes by luck and sometimes it's planned, but that kind of stuff you can't make up.
I love, too, watching on that because you were fearless and you were, like, yes-anding the situation. You didn't make it. You also just played the reality of the moment.
Well, here's the other thing. I'm a stand-up comic.
Yeah,
most people don't know that. I got this guy heckling me. So it's survival of the fittest.
Your job at that point.
Fuck you, man.
Shut down the heckler. That's what I loved. Yeah. And that's I could sense that right away. And I'm thinking, so many of your hosting gigs and everything up until that moment had prepped you for dick-ass Burt Reynolds giving you and because you didn't even flinch from the jabbing, throwing that, like, and I'm still married. I mean, like, because he deserved that, man.
Absolutely. He did deserve that.
So and a lot of guests would have been like, laughed it off and not. And
I've been waiting to be on that show my whole life. This prick is not going to screw it up
right.
for me. That was my, and my son said to me, why didn't you pull his wig off? I went, well, look, you know. Here's the thing.
Wait, how old is your kid at this point when he says that?
You know, 16.
That's awesome.
But here's the funny thing. He comes out. Mm-hmm. He's got lifts this big. Okay. Yeah. He's got a wig.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's got this, you know, tan makeup on. So he's got to go in a room and become this Burt Reynolds guy.
Right.
You know, the sad part about it is you know, he just had this auction where he's totally broke.
No.
And they had to sell everything so he could pay his bills and live. Oh, and then how does a guy who's like the number one box office star 5 years in a row end up with no money? It's a very sad story. I don't wish bad on anybody.
No.
I mean, he did a stupid thing that night and all that stuff, but I don't want to see him fail.
No.
And it's very sad. And I tried to get in touch with him many times after the fact.
No kidding.
To get him, because at the time I was doing the talk show on Lifetime, we wanted to have him on as a guest.
Been great.
And that was the first time I met him, and I never talked to him ever again.
But I just love how you didn't see him in that moment. You didn't see him as Burt Reynolds.
Hell no.
You saw him as the guy trying to fuck up my Tonight Show.
That's exactly it. And I was on stage at the Comedy Store, and if you're going to screw with me, you know, we all have all these heckler lines, you know, stick around, we'll put dough on the seat, stick your face, and we'll make asshole cookies. You know, we all do the lines.
wait. I've never heard that one.
You never heard that one? That must be old school.
For us coming up, the staple is, hey, I don't come to your work and knock the dicks out of your mouth.
Yeah, like, all that kind of stuff.
So what is it?
The line is, hey, sir, stick around. We're going to put some dough on the seats, put your face in, we'll make asshole cookies. It was the line. And my favorite line.
We are totally bringing that line back.
By the way, I love that it's food related. That could make it.
My best line was this guy, and I forget who it was. It may have been Dreesen. I forget who it was. No, it was, I forget the guy's name right off the top of my head. But anyway, he was being heckled by a woman, which very rarely happens. And he said, hey, sweetie, as long as I have a face, you'll have someplace to sit. What was my favorite line? And the other line was, this girl's so fat that when she sits on a quarter, boogers come out of George Washington's nose, which I loved. I mean, those old heckler lines.
I used to buy those Yo Mama Snaps books and bring them to elementary school and memorize them.
Yeah,
right. Come on, people. And the ones like, your mama's so fat, her blood type's Ragu.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
when she sits around the house, she really sits around the house.
Around the house, and then there was one that was like, your mom is so ugly she makes blind kids cry or something. I mean, like, she has to trick or treat over the phone. I mean, there's some mean ones. All right, before we wrap this up.
Yep.
But real quick, Oprah didn't give you any heckling.
Oprah
moments.
Was great. The first time I did it, we talked about OCD. And the second time I did it, we talked about food. And I was up against Alton Brown, who's about, he's the most talented guy ever and funny. And so they called me and said, we're going to do a thing about moon pies and this and that. And it's between you and Alton. I said, well, just hire Alton. He's like 100 times better than I'll ever be. And I got the job somehow. I don't know how. And I'm sitting there on the set with Oprah talking about moon pies and RC Colas. And I'm thinking, this is the most bizarre thing in my life.
This is, your life is a Mad Libs episode
well,
at that
is.
Point.
And they said to me, Oprah's on a diet. Make sure she doesn't eat the moon pie. I said, well, I can't control that.
I can't control Oprah.
Son of a bitch. She started eating the damn moon pie. Like, it was my fault, you know. But
your people
terrific.
Are probably coming up to you like, we told you not to let Oprah eat the moon pie. It's like, she's not a gremlin. It's not like she eats the moon pies and four other Oprahs pop out.
So ridiculous. And so it was great. And the first time I did it, I was like intimidated and all this stuff. Second time, you know, we didn't take a picture last time. Took wow. pictures and all this stuff. And they just did a segment on me, the best segment ever on Where Are They Now, which is a show they do on the O Channel.
Yeah.
And they go back and talk to people who are on the Oprah show. And they did my life in 7 minutes that was so amazing.
What was that like to watch?
It was bizarre. You know, my daughter watched it, and she said, Dad, they really... No, well, no, not at all.
It's a celebratory...
It was very positive, because you don't know what they're going to do.
Sure.
They came to my office in Philadelphia and hung around with me there. They followed me. I was... I'm a head judge on a show called Rewrapped on Food Network. They shot stuff there, and they had 8 hours of footage that they were cut down to 7 minutes. It's like, wow. Well, what the hell is that going to be?
Right.
And it was fantastic. They really did.
Is it online? I mean, I hope.
I think it is. Yeah. Maybe, you know, go to the O Channel and punch
search
in Mark Summers.
Mark Summers,
and see
where
if it's
are they
there.
Now?
But they really did a nice job.
After you watch the Burt Reynolds clip.
Yeah, right. So, fantastic. I don't know. It's been a hell of a career. It's been so much fun. And, you know, I'm still trying to do it. So at, you know, almost 64, I figure. Maybe at 70, I'll slow down a little bit. You know?
Maybe.
Maybe. But maybe not.
But maybe that's when you start your serious radio show.
Could
you know?
Be.
Or the Mark Summers podcast, which you should totally do.
Yeah, people tell me that. That's a lot of work. You guys are working hard.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's.
I love it because you guys did your homework. You know what
good.
I mean?
Okay,
cool,
good.
Man. I'm very
this, was this good? Because you told me to ask good questions. I feel like
you did. You took me down a different road,
okay,
which was
good.
Cool, man.
Awesome. Well, this is obviously, again, to be redundant, a huge treat.
Thank you.
We've had on Melissa McCarthy, Lisa Kudrow, Bob Saget. This is a bigger deal to me.
Oh my God! Yeah. Now, where did you do? Did you do those here?
Right here. Yeah. We went to Melissa's office because I was in the heat with her and Sandra Bullock.
Oh, nice.
And so you know, again, just like you do, build relationships. That's how Paul Feig came by, and you know, Joy McIntyre from New Kids on the Block, and
nice.
Just we're all in those movies. So then you know, just asked and like with you, I stayed on Melissa for a while to do it, and then at one point I just, because there's a balance between being proactive and being a nuisance, and you just got to feel it out. And then I saw her at a little party of Paul's, and she's like, "Hey, aren't I supposed to do your podcast?" Because I had left it alone, and I was like, "Yeah." And then she goes, "Hit up my assistant the same way you did, because you're like, it's not the top of my list, but if you go through this person, then it's
Unfortunately, my schedule is insane.
But I appreciate you saying that, because
I got you. Ryan runs my life,
yeah,
and you know, I always say coordinated through him,
yeah.
And I've been in, you know, because I'm not here that often, it's hard to catch me, and I'm generally when I'm here, I'm working like crazy,
yeah, sure.
So it's kind of tough. Saget must have been great, though, I bet.
Incredible. Yeah.
It was fantastic.
I'll send you some sound bites. I mean, he made fun of my grandpa's old chair a lot. He was just... but a great blend, too, like you were, of you know, talking, adding funny, but also, like, getting autobiographical about stuff. And just
a nice, smart man who's gone through a lot of interesting stuff.
Totally.
Fascinating, you know? Stuff.
Yeah.
But you making time for this is the best, and it's to have one of your heroes be just as cool and funny is the best.
I mean, they say never meet your heroes because they'll always disappoint you. That person never met Mark Summers.
Oh, that's too nice. Yeah, you guys did a great job. I appreciate that. So how do I hear this?
Well, send you the link. But cool. It's we on iTunes and Stitcher, and it's all on the you know, aboutlastnightpodcast.com. But we'll send it to
nice.
You so you can
send
tweet
me
it
the
out.
Link and,
are you a big Twitter guy?
I am a big Twitter guy. You know, you kind of have to do it. You got to be on social media. And I, you know, when I got onto Twitter a couple of years ago, I didn't know what it was. And so they said, you know, what name do you want to? So I put in the dumbest. Instead of doing Mark Summers or the real Mark Summers or whatever, I put in IBATVMC, which I thought was being clever. But of course, now nobody can find me. And when I finally got verified, I asked if I could switch it over. They wouldn't let me. So I'm always going to be IBATV. And people go, IBLT. Oh, Jesus.
IBSWMBA? What is
that? That's right. So it's IB a TV MC. That's my thing. But I think now if you put in Mark Summers, they find me.
Yeah, it just goes to you. Sure.
But I'm on Twitter fairly often.
And the shows that you that are currently Mark Summers productions that are going right now that people should be watching
are Restaurant Impossible, and there will be a Shark special in July on Discovery, and 6 Degrees of Everything goes on August 18th on True. And so I'm always online tweeting about you know, what's going on show wise, or if I'm making a personal appearance somewhere. Yeah. And it's fun. You know, there was a an improv troupe, sort of a Second City esque kind of thing in Chicago that did a Double Dare night, and so I flew to Chicago and hosted it one night.
Oh, my God. How insane did those people go?
They went berserk. And it was so much fun. I mean, I walked out and like this audience shat themselves. It was fantastic.
Because they didn't know you were going to be
there. They didn't know I was going to be. And that was so much fun. And then I went out with the you know, the cast afterwards. We hung out till like, you know, 11 o'clock eating and drinking and stuff. And, you know, people don't expect. But look, if you don't ask, you don't get.
I was just going to say.
And I love paying back and helping. And it's just fun. It's fun for me. It's more fun for me, believe it or not, than it is for you guys. It's just...
So you're telling me if I get a handful of my favorite comedians and up in Seattle, rent out a big theater and try to orchestrate some...
If I can work it out, I'd come up.
Well, yeah, now we know. Now we just added something to our bucket list for sure.
I mean, it's just so much fun. And, you know, trying to coordinate the schedules is sometimes tough. But why not do it? You know, I mean,
why not? Yeah,
why not? Why not?
Oh, why not have more fun that you weren't, that you didn't know was an option before?
Yeah. Well, and you know, look, half the fun is helping other people as well. And if I can sell tickets or, you know, do a charity thing or whatever. I was in San Diego 2 weekends ago doing a thing for, there was a young girl who had a heart problem. She died at a young age. And they did this sort of Broadway show night. People know I like Broadway. Next thing I know, I was up there hosting the night. And I'm going to do it again next year because it was amazing. I'm on the board of a thing called Alex's Lemonade Stand where we raise millions of dollars for childhood cancer. I got involved with that for two reasons. One, it was Philly-based. Number two, I was diagnosed with cancer about 5 years ago, and now I'm fine and all that stuff. But it's paying back, you know? It's like you're put here on the planet to do good things, hopefully, and if you can help some other human by whatever notoriety I have, if it sells more seats and raises more dollars, then you should do it, you know?
That's that's a great thing to say, and that's a great model to live your life by. And you look at the successes that you've had, and, I mean, now hearing the stories behind those successes, I love hearing them because it's just you showed up, you put in your time, you did the hours, and then when the work came your way, you were able to take advantage of
it. Right. Is there a little person's sort of charity that we should raise money for?
There is, actually.
Yeah, it's
is
called
there
the, really? It's called the Brad Williams Rent Fund, and it's called Rent's Coming Up in 2 months. And,
Did you ever meet, I met Billy Barty. Did you ever meet him?
I did.
He was a cool guy.
Billy Barty founded LPA, which is Little People of America.
Yep.
And I got to meet him a couple times, and one of the greatest honors I ever had in my life was to make him laugh.
Well, that must have been cool.
It was very
cool. He was a very nice man. And then throughout the years, I got to meet some of the folks who were in Wizard of Oz and all
kidding.
Stuff. And you know, and it's fun. You know, I don't know.
I think we have one left. There's one
left.
There's
one
munchkin
left.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
Which sounds like a one act play by itself. One munchkin left. But yeah, we got we still got one of the munchkins left. That's
amazing, amazing. Well, I can just tell by the way you are that you. I bet you're really funny on stage. I just have
he's
a
great. Thank you. Hey, Mark, and I'm here too. But but I'm also great. But,
well, I mean, currently I have a 1 hour Showtime special that's playing.
Really?
His first 1 hour comedy special.
Yeah. Oh my
it's
God.
A big deal. It airs this Friday.
Well, yeah. By the time this airs, it will have already aired. But
that is way cool.
I'll send you a reminder for Ryan to tell you to DVR it on Showtime.
And what do you have coming up?
A lot of stuff, Mark.
He's going to be making a sandwich at Subway pretty soon.
Fuck you. I'll be at Scottsdale. I'm in Spy, the new Paul Feig movie coming out.
Are you really?
Yeah, he is.
That's cool.
I travel on the weekends headlining. Same way, both of us are on the weekend on the road 3 weekends a month.
Nice.
And then the podcast, we just currently left. We're trying to sell a travel show with us. We just left USA
I just
today.
Heard on my walk in. Well, see, here's what you have
I feel like maybe we should bring
us.
It to you. Maybe next.
Well, we should talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, you have great looks. Okay.
Thanks, buddy.
And so,
how about the voice?
Look
doing
at
okay
us.
With the voice?
I mean, we're trying hard here.
What are you talking about, Mark? I'm a beefcake.
Yeah, why are you sucking me into your world?
Yeah, I'm on. I mean, hell.
Come on. Let's look in the mirror.
You could put me on the cover.
If you just think about it, if you're a woman, and the three of us are walking down, who's going to get laid first?
Oh, the midget. That's the best story.
Yeah, you won't believe this.
Obviously.
Yeah, he's right. Yeah. Oh, a woman's never banged a Jew before. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even why you bring this up for a competition, Mark.
That's right. Now that you mentioned, I think you're right.
He is right.
Yeah, you're right. Believe it. Yeah, and they're hung the same way. Yeah. I had no idea.
Thank you, sir. Darn right.
Not that I know that, but I'm supposing.
Well, that's a whole new type of physical challenge.
Yeah.
So, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.